and welcome to episode 278 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Viper, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The co-creator of the ever-expanding Tributeverse, Tony Esmond.
Hello.
That was very well done, Tony. Very professional.
Plus, sorry, my missus was waving at me through the door. I was confused for a second.
Oh.
She looked like she was being nice. I was a bit worried. It put me off a bit. Sorry, continue.
Blimey. It's strange days indeed.
Yeah.
But don't worry, folks. It's going to be 2 hours of entertainment, because if us three aren't enough, we're very pleased to be joined by another guest this week. Very special one. Writer, a veteran in the podcast game, and one of the brain trusts behind the mighty Geek Syndicate, no less. It's the Nuge, a.k.a. Barry Nugent. Hello, sir.
So basically, you started off that intro by calling me up.
What did I call you?
Yeah, you died called, then at that point. Yeah, what happened there?
Yeah, you called me a veteran.
Oh,
so yeah. I'm old.
It's not like you're in the Falklands, is it? Let's face it.
Well, you say that.
I can't talk about
that, though. You saw it on that. Official secrets and all that.
I mean, you know, on paper, remember paper, kids? We've been doing this for like 5+ years now, so I guess to some people, we're veterans in some sort of way, which is, you're right, I feel really old now that I've said it. Now that I've said it out loud.
Now put yourself in my shoes.
Oh, God, yeah, because how long has Geek Syndicate been going now? What year did you
start? We started in October 2006.
Wow.
So, yeah, about 14 years.
14 years. So we've got a bit of time to catch up with them.
Yeah.
And if you haven't heard the show, you really must, because it's top quality stuff. Although, whereas they... What was it? Put the sass back into geekdom.
Depending how much we've been drinking.
isn't sass like a cool word? I expect you were using it before it was adopted by everyone else, were you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. We were using it when it was still called sarsaparilla in the old west.
I get you. Yeah. Lassoing horses.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas on this show, there's no sass. We're just very unprofessional.
We're a bit sus. To be fair,
we put the sus back into podcasts.
Put the suspicious back into comic fans.
You work on the basis it ever came out of podcasting, the sus and the suspicious.
Yeah, true. Well, I mean, obviously, we've seen a billion podcasts spring up since we decided to start talking. So you were there, like, near the...
Long before that.
Long before that. So
putting the scat back into comics.
Well, when we started, there were two other UK comic podcasts.
What were those ones?
Birds of Geek and Quiet Panologists at Work.
Q-Paul for short,
who I still say, hand on heart, still the best podcast ever. Those guys were so they were just hilarious.
I can't remember. I remember listening to it.
Matt and John, their names. They were just funny guys. And when they used to go to comic convention to do cosplay, they used to do purposely crap, but it was always really good, because I think at one of them they turned up as Avengers, but it was all in cardboard. He was Wolverine, but it was all in cardboard, and the other one was Batman, and he was all in cardboard. But it was wicked, and they were trying to say, "No, it's crap." I'm like, "No, mate, it looks really good."
Yeah, but that crap pretending it's good is an aesthetic that we adopted. To be fair, so
no, we don't even pretend it's good.
Working for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, these days we call it authentic.
is that what the kids are saying?
Yeah,
now?
You know
that,
how like charity shops are now vintage stores, aren't they?
Are they? Oh, fucking hell. What's wrong with people? Honestly.
Or everything's an emporium now.
So vintage normally just smells of piss, does it? Is that how it works, is it?
Normally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wearing vintage clothes right now. I mean, this is turning into the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
I did expect it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yep. But, you know, buckle up, folks, because we're going to talk about a few different things. Because we're going to put the world to rights this week, because it's been quite a year so far. And we've got the joy of Thought Bubble just around the corner, and we'll talk a bit more about that later. But, you know, we wanted just to lay down the law, talk about some things, have some fun, also talk about some comics, writing, and all kinds. And who better to do it with than the Nuge? Oh, so weird. I've even been on a podcast at Barry's, and I've never called him that.
The Nuge. No. Is he going to kill you calling him the Nuge as well? Is that what happened?
No. It's just Brad. No.
What nicknames have you had, Nuge, other than that Nuge?
I remember when we first started, some people used to call me like Nuge Cake, which was really bizarre.
What? Nuge Cake?
Yeah.
Hang on, where are we going with this?
Yeah, well, it was going there. There was a calendar. But what I've always found really bizarre about podcasting, and I'm sure you fellas will probably say the same thing, is because I suppose it depends on the podcast, because some podcasts are a lot more kind of
musical,
efficient, say, right, than ours is.
Serious.
Yeah. And they stick to, like, we're here to review comics or we're here to review films, and that's what they do. And they don't go outside those lines. Whereas we were always described as, like, I think the best review we ever got was someone who said it's like being in the table, being in the pub, and listening to a conversation on the table next to you, and thinking you want to be sitting at that table. That's probably the best review we ever got.
Yeah.
And okay. I think because we talk so much about our own lives on the podcast and what we're going through, both highs and lows, what I had to get used to was when I did meet some people who listen to the podcast, they would say things to me. How the hell did you? It sounds really stupid, you know. It is that thing that I think when podcasters say it, other people think, yeah, you're just saying that because you're full of yourself. But genuinely, you don't believe that people listen to your podcast.
Yeah, we you get just the same, man. I'll tell you what I get. I get people come up to me and go, you're a wanker, aren't you? And I'm like, oh, fuck's sake. Do you know what I mean? Because I act like this on the podcast.
Because they hear us interacting, but then they come up. And it's just, it's an odd scenario all around.
Because we're
really.
In people's ears. Yeah. I suppose there's a personal element to it, isn't there? Yeah. I don't mind that so much.
But funnily enough, Vince did this. It was one of the first times I met Vince, and Dave was with me. We were talking to Vince. And then Dave and I then suddenly broke into an argument. And then I heard Vince go, it's just like the podcast. I don't want to go, no, motherfucker, this is our lives. We haven't staged this for anyone's benefit.
I mean, if you decide to do a podcast, you are kind of letting people in a certain way.
To a certain extent. Yeah.
To a certain extent. A lot of people will never know the truth behind us on this show. They'll never
people think we all
truth.
Live together. Yeah. There are people who say, you all live in the same house, don't you? And all sit around a table and do this.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. And would sexy.
It? Would it?
Yeah.
Would it?
Yeah.
You don't even meet up in the same county.
No.
We got very excited because we met up once this year.
We're so easily pleased.
Yeah.
Which is what you have to be when you read comics.
Yeah.
Talking about reading comics.
Where can you read them?
Where can you read them, Dan?
Comic House.
Yes. Our lovely sponsor, Comic House. Nice one, Butcher. Nice one.
Nuge Cake almost put us off there.
Yeah. I can't tell a lie. I've been hired by like Comixology. She's just come on and just
torpedo.
Well, there's another place to get your digital indie comics. And that's Comic House. They are our sponsor, our lovely sponsor. They've been with us for a few years now. God bless them. They will have a presence, no doubt, at Thought Bubble, I'd imagine, in some shape or form.
Yeah.
But
that's
they've
what all... it's us, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, no. Nope. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. We've got big things. Big at Thought Bubble, I mean. Don't laugh at that, Dan. Anyway, I'm torpedoing my own sponsorship ad. It's Barry's fault. He put me off.
Yeah, that's right. Just blame everything on me. That's,
thanks.
Great.
Thanks for letting me. Yeah.
All the way through. Baz Cake.
Yeah. God, this is going to go badly. But yeah, but if you don't want things to go badly, you should check out Comic House, because there's nothing but great indie comics on there. Yes. Like I say, for some reason, they still sponsor this show. If you go to comichouse.com, there's loads of titles on their database. If you self-publish your books, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. You know, if you've got boxes, you know, I mean, you can't go to a comic convention at the moment, so there's lots of different avenues to get your books out there.
Are you on there, Barry?
Sorry?
Are you on there, babes?
Yes, I am on. Yes, yeah, my titles are on there. I was just going to say, actually, I really like Comic House. There's a lot of great indie stuff on there, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what they're doing is really good. It's the sort of thing that, you know, I've been saying for years, we needed something like that for the indie scene. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And people have tried, but this seems to be the one that's really sort of taken off of it. So yeah, I'm all here for that.
Yeah. I mean, they've been in the trenches, putting in the grind, haven't they? You know, because it's been doing it for a couple of years, which is what you need to do with any sort of, you know, especially because it's quite a big thing, isn't it, to put an indie.
It's another revenue stream. It's not huge amounts, but we certainly get paid by them. It's great. Yeah.
So, and if you want to read more indie comics, you should check out comichouse.com. There's also an app which we talk about every week. and Dan usually has a list. Dan, what's on there at the moment?
We've got Dragon's Mist from Marcosia, The Indifference Engine Volume 2, The Suicide Show, Last Sheriff 6 by the Wrecked Hero Boys. I've just been reading Knights vs. Pirates, really enjoying that. New York City Gallows Issue 2, Gifts and Burdens. I've read the first one of that. And Star of the Bunch is Atomic Hercules 1 by Tribute Press.
Yes.
Only as Adam Valp.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
For all your cockeyed needs.
Not safe for work.
And I'm just about to... I've got to do the amends on Vanguard issue 18, and that'll be going on the app ASAP. Yes. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yes, so much to check out on Comic House. If I slowed down during my ad just then, my cat walked into the room for the second week in a row. Yeah. And you might hear him a couple of times. Don't look at me like that, Bobby. I'm trying to work here. What's your problem? Anyway.
How are you trying to work?
Yeah. He's a three-legged legend, that boy. And Comic House are legends in the indie comic scene. So go to comichouse.com, find out more. It's only £3 a month, which is cheaper than a normal monthly digital comic.
Fucking not half.
Bobby agrees with me.
Yeah, please, Bobby.
So check out your 14-day free trial and dive headfirst into the world of small press at comichouse.com. There you go. I can already tell this cat's going to wind me up for the next hour and a half.
That was our best advert for ages, actually.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
There you go.
Pat each other on the back. Well done, guys.
Yes.
And you, Barry, you took part. I'm pleased with you.
Yeah.
Did you say Indifference Engine 2 was one of the ones? Yeah, that's a corker. I've read that. It's Side Deton, isn't it, if memory serves?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that how you say the second name of Side?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been saying it wrong, actually. Mm. Yeah, I think I said it a few years ago. We reviewed a book of his a few years ago. I said it wrong. Yeah. Yes.
And Jeff,
disclaimer that we always say all the names wrong all the time.
Exactly.
And
of course,
speaking of names.
Oh, yes.
So congratulations to the Broken Shires, Victoria and Nicholas, on the arrival of... now, I'm not sure if this is Nick winding me up, but he told me the name of their new child is Ezra Thomas Dracula Calrissian Stonehenge Brokenshire.
That's a name.
That's a cool name. Totally. That's the best name ever. Yeah.
Touching on all the fan bases there.
Yeah.
Always call your kid Dracula. It'll end up well.
Oh, yeah. What do you mean? What, you're saying it won't?
No, I'm saying it will. No, Dracula Hunt.
I went to school with a kid called Ezra.
It's a cool name, isn't it? It always sort of sounds a bit like they should be playing sort of bluegrass or something like that to me.
I know that Ezra pulled a knife for me, so that's a different story.
That's North London, my friend.
Yeah, happy days.
Happy days indeed. Blimey, we're going to get real this week. Yes, from that joyous news to the year that is 2020, which is what can you say about it? I mean, on this show, I mean, we bring the positive every week. And we hope that we have made you laugh over the past few months, obviously, with the the bastard virus that's out there. It's been a strange one, and it's been odd for indie comics in general and indie comics creators. Some, if you're watching Kickstarter, are more prolific than ever. but also in the mainstream, it's had a major effect on them as well. But this may, the mainstream, you know, the quality of the mainstream has been a topic of debate occasionally on this show anyway, hasn't it, really?
Weekly.
The past few years. Yeah, normally weekly when Tony goes, oh, I've read this week. Oh. Although you do point out when you love a comic, which
yeah,
I always do.
Yeah, we're strictly fair and fairly strict, you know.
Yeah.
There was a couple of egregious examples that I sent to you over the past couple of weeks.
Which is like, oh, Christ, yeah.
A comic.
And I found, I don't know about you guys, I found in this year, well, never, I've stayed away from the bigger publishers, and I've merged more into the indie scene, or searching out European books, or, you know, stuff from all over the world to check out, rather than, you know, what is it about the big two that aren't doing it for me? But like Barry, your reading habits are usually they're far and wide anyway. But what has your reading been like in terms of comics this year?
I mean, are you a pull list customer, Barry?
No, I'm not. No, right. And part of that, I used to be way back in the day, probably before we started GS. And then, and it's funny because my local comic shop guy used to tell me off when I used to see him, because he was like, you know, you never talk about it. You know, you don't come into the shop or anything like that.
Just out of interest, what was your local comic shop, dude?
Close Encounters.
Oh, okay. Northampton. Yeah.
But part of the problem, not a problem at all, it's a great problem, is that, you know, Dave and I get sent so much stuff to review that I didn't need to have a pull list because I was kind of missing out on other stuff. And what I found was I'd kind of moved away from, I mean, I was more of a Marvel fan than Dave's to DC. But I'd moved away from that sort of stuff anyway. I still will read them, but I find a lot of it so impenetrable now. And it feels like every week there's a new number one of something, which isn't really a number one, because when you pick it up, it sort of says it's number one, but you need to have read the previous 90 issues to understand it's number one. Mm. So I find that if I do read any Marvel or DC, it's more self-contained stuff. So like Mr. Miracle, which is one of the ones I remember reading earlier this year, which I absolutely was blown away by. I really enjoyed that. But I kind of like that kind of beginning, middle and end now, rather than this sort of endless sort of super cycle.
Yeah, I'm a lover of the Marvel app, dude. I have to say, I've really jumped all over that, because it's come down in price and it's only a 3-month lag now. So it's $8.99.
Oh, really?
And you're getting comics that are 3 months. Sometimes comics sit on my read pile for 6 months, then mine are 3 months.
I think I might try that app out and see how it bites me. Try and get back into some Marvel stuff, because I've really gone with it at this year.
I did get, because I got Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah.
Get comics that way. And then
like
I think,
a limited library, isn't there? Yeah.
I think I did it. I think it's Kindle Unlimited, which weirdly, I think I signed up for by accident, because it was like a month free, and then all of a sudden.
You got it, yeah.
I got it, but what I realised was in my the comics that I had in that list that were under there were comics that I really wanted to read. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to sort of stick with it, and because it's linked to the sort of Comicsology Unlimited, I sort of look and see, because we don't get it over here, do we? So
no, it's such a shame, isn't it? Yeah,
that's the way you get it, because a lot of the stuff which is on Unlimited is on the Kindle Unlimited.
Mm. I always forget about that, because it's almost like a sort of library service as well, isn't it?
You can only have so many.
But
I think it's 10 titles, and then you have to sort of return them.
It's quite heavy on the Star Wars and stuff as well, isn't it? From what I remember,
The problem with it is, so I've always had this big thing about the way comics are categorized, and certainly in comic shops, and probably makes me unpopular in certain quarters. Apologies.
We're all about being unpopular on this show. We've been unpopular since we started.
Own it.
Yeah, one of the things that Comic House did when it came out that I really liked was things were in genre.
Yeah.
You know, which just made it more accessible to new readers, rather than this idea that everyone knows that if you want to get something that's a bit more supernatural or cult, you should get more Dark Horse. Do you know what I mean? And that sort of stuff. I just like the fact that it's more like a bookshop where you actually go to the section that you're interested in. I fancy a thriller, you go to the thriller section.
Yeah.
But what I find with the sort of Kindle side of things, it's quite hard to find the comics because there's a lot of like Boom Studios on there. There's some Image stuff on there, but you kind of almost need to know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, like you say, you do just get a load of Star Wars stuff if you just go to the comics section.
Okay. Yeah.
You kind of need to see it on Comixology, and then if it says it's part of Unlimited, then go to Kindle and then find it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But weirdly, to sort of answer your question, for me, because I've kind of, I think every creative person kind of deals with, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that. And mine has just been, you know, up and down. And when it's been, you know, when it's been down, it's kind of been like in the dregs. And I've had some real sort of down moments this year. And what I realized was, is that my reading really suffered for it. So I went through, and certainly through the first sort of lockdown, I kind of barely did any reading. And then sort of came out of it, view like, right, I'm going to do some reading, then didn't. And then I managed to sort of finish my novel that I was working on. So I think a lot of time went into that. Mm-hmm. And then because I used to read a lot with my wife and we'd go away and stuff. And then she suddenly was complaining the eye was hurt, and it led to a detached retina. So she had to go in for an emergency operation. Yeah. So the year's just been shit.
It does all take a toll. I mean, in terms of reading, I haven't read as much, you know, but it's like short, sharp bursts, a bit of an assault rifle reference there, but like sometimes I won't read it, and then I'll read like three or four. I mean, the thing is, it's also, I'm reading graphic novels now, or like, you know, they're self-contained. Yeah. These are books.
We say this quite a lot, don't we? I don't know if you found this, Barry, but when we started this show, what, 5.5 ago, we were reviewing books that were 22 pages long.
Yeah.
But it seems to be more and more books now are like 140 pages.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's, you know, to that sort of quick read of a comic and roll it up and put it in your back pocket, it sort of is slowly creeping away, I think. So it's almost a bigger thing to pick up a comic book to read now.
Yeah.
Also, the indie comics world, I don't know if it's exploded and you know, maybe when we started, it was always then we just didn't see it. I don't think it was. I think it was much smaller when we started. Okay. And certainly when we
I was, man. I was selling indie. I mean, I was on the indie scene in 1999 onwards at tables at Bristol and stuff. And there was very few of us, man. Very few.
Yeah. And I think and you were still seeing a little bit. And I know more from the sort of novel side of things as someone who's self-published. Hmm. It's worse in prose. You were seen as like dirty stepchild. I think comics were more forgiving, but certainly there was that kind of a stigma back in the, do you know what I mean? Then when you were sort of self-publishing and stuff, it was like you're not legit and whatever. Yeah.
Do you mean like in the prose world itself, like when you were a self-published sort of prose author, you go out and you're seen by, you look down by other authors at first?
Yeah, yeah. Not really at first. I think now
they have to get to know me first before they look down at me.
I think with the explosion of like, you know, Kindle and digital and stuff like that, I think, and there's been some sort of big successes and stuff, I think it has changed that landscape, but it is still there, you know. And, you know, sometimes that is sort of a difficult thing. But I think certainly what I've found now is even the self-contained stuff is, you know, you're looking at sort of at least sort of 60 pages upwards. And it is difficult. It's also difficult when you're getting sent a lot of stuff, and I'm sure you guys have the same thing, and you've got to try and because we don't just do comics, I mean, we used to have different, I mean, we still do have different podcasts on our feed, which did deal with different things. But, we always, when we started GS, it was just a conversation. So we always knew we were going to be talking about films and comics and, you know, games and basically whatever came into our head that week.
Yeah.
And so we got a limited, say, space for comics, you know. So trying to decide out of, you know, the sort of 5-6 graphic novels that you've been sort of sent or people contacting you, Which ones to read is quite difficult. And then
I mean, we just do comics, Barry, and it's difficult for us, man. I mean, it's difficult to fit it all in. I don't know about you, but I get like a sense of sort of, I feel slightly guilty if I don't manage to mention something, you know?
Yeah. And one of the other things is like, I'm doing a comic today, which is really very trashy. It's supposed to be. But then when you have to address like Kent State, there's like, you've got to take a level of responsibility of dealing with it appropriately and handling the source material, doing a bit of research, and so it can vary, and sometimes it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's all genres, isn't it? You know, from the hard hitting sort of like true life things like Kent State to the completely schlocky or the all ages kids comics, or
I did a tweet yesterday about like kids books. Like, if you're trying to be a children's author, if you've got to be a children's author, if you're a celebrity or you're in. And like, I don't think we had that so much in the comics, but that we had the Keanu Reeves thing, obviously, with the Berserker. That like did really well. And
I know there's a lot of bad feeling about Walliams' books because they're pushing other people's books off the shelves. That's a sort of quite a common thing I hear about it through nobrow creators. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a difficult, I mean, which I, as I said, I saw that tweet and I think I replied, you know, because obviously this is the year I decided to, well, I've worked on it a couple of years, but to kind of write a fiction novel aimed at middle graders, sort of 9 to 12.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's that's the same way every fucker is now, right?
Because that's quite, because that's sort of quite a departure anyway, isn't it? Because obviously you had like the Unseen Shadows novels and like the comics and the sort of mini universe that you built up around that, which is dark espionage historical action, you know, seriously folks, there's all kinds of things that go into this, and then you've switched up a gears. Did you just want to just try something fresh?
No, what it was, it's kind of been about 3 years in the making. Basically, I'd got approached by an agent at the time, who had read some of my stuff and was interested in sort of representing me and stuff. So I went and I met her. She didn't end up representing me for varying reasons. But one of the things that she'd said to me was that she gave me a figure, and it was something stupid like, I don't know, 2% of authors currently are not white. Were black and male authors, and I think, and that was part of the reason why she had sort of seen me and, you know, decided to approach me and stuff. And I have varying issues about that. I don't necessarily like that, you know. I do want to do that. That's who I am, you know. But that just stuck with me, and I kind of then said to her, "Well, I'm not, you know, I'm not a children's writer. I wouldn't even know where to start."
Yeah.
She said, "Well, you know, go away, have a think about it." And I was like, "Okay." And then talked to my wife about it, who was always is like the fat of knowledge, and she just said, "You know, just, you know, give it a go. Write what you know." So, which is why I then sort of came up with the idea of writing these kids, and it's kind of set in the '80s, and I've kind of described it as like Grange Hill meets Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it's kind of set in a North London comprehensive school. And
I so wanted to do the Grange Hill theme song then.
Do the bit with the sausage.
Wow, wow, wow. Yeah.
There's no heroin. Don't have Zammo in it. We don't need heroin in it.
No. I can guarantee there's no drugs. There is death, but there are no drugs. So I think that kind of led me down that road, really. And the more I, in many ways, that became a bit of a saving grace of 2020 for me, because when I'd finished it, and I'm kind of editing at the moment, Sue had sort of said to me, you know, in all the years I've seen you write, I've never seen you so happy working on something. And I think probably because the other books I've written have been quite,
well, get her to watch you now, my friend, because, you know, it'll be a big grin, won't it? Finally, you're on the Awesome Comics podcast.
Yeah. She's, I mean,
2020 just peaked, my friend.
Yeah, she's so excited. She's, you know. She's like, make sure you get the autographs and everything. And I was like, don't worry, calm down.
Don't look Tony in the eye.
Yeah.
Say that.
Yeah. It'll be like Raid. It'll be like the end of Raid. My face will melt and explode and shit.
It's sexy. You're in pajamas.
Yeah. So yeah, so I think so overall reading habits of 2020 have been really up and down, but I have read some good stuff. One of the things I've seen really impressed me actually is the amount of people that have kind of rallied with it creatively and have brought out some kind of amazing stuff. And the kind of autobiographical, I can't never say that word right, I can't remember, this is the Rachel Smith one that she's been doing through lockdown.
Yes, it is right.
I think that's been like amazing what she's been doing with that. I've always loved her stuff anyway, but just the way she's charted it, it's one of those. I think she has brought it out, or she was going to collect it all. But I think it's one of those ones that I certainly will pick up when it comes out.
Longer.
Yeah, I think I saw one yesterday.
I think it's still going. But yeah, I think it'd be one of those ones that we'll look back on in years to come, you know, and hopefully when things settle down.
I think it's certainly just, we're in a situation where, like, as you say, creatively, it can be both difficult and people bury themselves in their work as well. Do you know what I mean?
I reviewed Elizabeth Querstritt's one a few weeks ago, didn't I? And it seems to me, you remember when we were like, I know we're back into it now, but when we were full in lockdown, you know, it was just like a really strange world. That whenever that was it, I don't know, March, April, around that period?
Feels
like it was fucking years ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When we were going out for those walks and sort of waving at your neighbours or on their daily walks, and no one was, as the streets were empty. And I walked through London at that point and it was just completely and utterly dead. It was just the most amazing experience, you know.
The amount of drone footage that must have been taken during that time for the films we're going to see over the next couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, have you seen that? I think it's produced by Michael Bay.
Don't know how I feel about this. I know what you mean. He's
what is right. It?
It's a coronavirus-based thriller, isn't it? That Michael Bay has directed.
I think it's called Songbird.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched a trailer. We got sent a trailer for it, I think, a few days ago, and I sort of watched it and. Yeah, a bit like you, Vince. I sort of sat there and I'm like, I do know how I feel about it. It's like, dude, read the fucking room. Yeah.
What is it? I don't know what it is.
I think it's
what
like people are quarantined and then it evolves or something like that. Or it's...
Yeah, but, well, no, it is. It's basically, it's a COVID-type virus. They even call it COVID. They didn't refer to it as COVID. It's a COVID virus. I'm assuming it's like in the future, but it's not in the far-flung future, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And everyone's on lockdown, everyone's quarantined, army's kind of taken over. It's that kind of almost like sort of post-apocalyptic type thing. Yeah. But it's the parallels to COVID, for me, are way too close, which then makes it way too soon.
And I think creatively, there's creative responsibility, which Michael
he's
Bay...
He's never been all over that, Michael Bay.
But yeah,
look
how
he treated Transformers, goddammit.
Yeah.
But I think there is a creative responsibility in the way that people treat these things, because it's...
Is there a self-indulgence, do you think, we're seeing with some of these lockdown comics?
There can be with like comics anyway.
Yeah, I think that. I think
it's inevitable.
I think sitting in your house, being on your own, I think it's maybe a little. People are maybe a little bit too much on that. I mean, Barry, after a couple of weeks of it breaking, we got a couple of pitches around COVID stories at Nobrow. You know, really? Literally in March. You know, yeah. I think there's a money grab there somewhere, isn't there, that people are seeing?
I think this will affect... I was thinking about this when we were talking about horror on last week's episode. How will this affect the way that people write those? Because we've seen it a million times, the post-apocalyptic zombie genre. And I'm getting away from the virus. Nothing based on what we're experiencing now. But when you're creating that, you know, the Walking Dead style world, or someone trapped alone in their apartment while the world's going crazy, now there's a certain amount of life experience that goes into it. You know, how does this this is going to be like, you know.
Yeah, the worst thing that happens is not that you've run out of things to watch on Netflix.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think, and I think the thing is, as geeks, like, we are so in tune to this sort of thing. And I'm sort of saying to people, like, it sounds like a bit of an extreme tinfoil hat, but I'm like, I never in my life expected to live through an apocalypse. Now, by this, I mean, not that, like, you know, we're all dead and it's all zombies everywhere, but in the fact that we are living through a major global shift.
Yeah.
You know, and I never thought I'd be living in a time where, like, you know, I've got to do all these specific things to protect myself, protect my family.
Yeah.
A situation when we had the first lockdown, and I went down to my local shop, and I go down there quite often to buy booze or whatever, and I know them quite well down there. And I went down there, and the shelves were pretty much empty.
Yeah.
And he'd said to me before I went, he goes, he sort of whispered to me, he's like, "What are you after?" And I'm like, "Well, I was just looking to get, you know, I said I was looking to get some bread and blah blah."
And some girls. Like,
yeah. And he had a stock of, like, bread and pasta and whatever behind the counter for his regulars, because he said loads of people that he'd never seen before were just coming and clearing the shop out, you know. Right. And that's ridiculous. You know, that's not the sort of thing you expect to wake up and have to deal with. So I think now, if you're gonna write them these sorts of comics and stuff, I think you kind of have to take that a little bit into
consideration.
It's giving everyone a little bit of a reality shock, isn't it? Around
Around,
and I think there's also
worked through it, haven't we?
Yeah, with something like this that affects so many people, and, you know, whether it be themselves or their loved ones, or they've lost people and stuff, you've got to bear that in mind as well. Especially if you're doing anything that is any way related to the situation that the world is in right now, be bloody responsible, because people are genuinely losing loved ones, and I think it's never been more important to be responsible as a comic book creator.
Yeah, I agree, man. And, you know, I mean, people that know me closely know that I had a bit of a shock last couple of days, and it actually made me angry, not perhaps at comic creators, but more at these people who are denying that it's a problem. You know, these people who believe it's connected to 5G foam masts. You know, these sort of people actually made me angry. You know, genuinely, I was quite angry at it. And I think you're right. There is a responsibility to it, Barry. I think you're absolutely right. There's a responsibility now that we've seen the reality of it. We need to apply ourselves to those facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's, you know, I'm not saying you should stop doing those comics. I'm not saying that. I think
this should enrich them, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. The story, should, you know, I expect them to be more, like you said, enriched. The storytelling should change. It should reflect that almost now, because we've been there, you know.
Yeah. Mm. There's also the side where in this time, we want to be entertained. We're, you know, there's no avoiding the harsh realities of the world. You know, it's affecting everyone now, everyone's daily lives. And there's nothing wrong with just that, you know, hour and a half of a silly film, or, you know, that probably a 5-minute read if it's a, you know, comics.
And I mean, I agree completely. We put 3 or 4 comics out now this year from our little company, and we do it just to make us laugh, man. It's cheered us up. The act of people reading it, enjoying it, and the act of actually doing it has really fucking improved my lockdown experience, I've got to be honest with you.
And I think that's why, Barry, you saying you moving into this sort of new genre, and also, you know, a fun kids, you know, an all ages sort of adventure book, has obviously been therapeutic for you in its own way. It's just been to delve into creating things that are joyful. I mean, right now, I don't think I could create a real dark story right now. I think I'd probably, you know, I've got some ideas of stuff to work on, and most of them are more in that fun area of books and stuff, because you got to put yourself in a dark headspace if you're working on dark material.
Well, the thing
you
is,
you have to emote it, don't you?
And I think the thing is I'm in a bit of a catch-22, because after finishing the book, and even though it's a kind of a standalone, you know, I can do more, which is part of my plan, but however, I've you mentioned Unseen Shadows. I made the mistake of saying it was a trilogy. You should never have done that, first off. So I'm now in this situation where I've written two books, which have taken me years and years. Apologies to people. And I have to round the whole thing up. So I still have a book waiting. And I remember doing an interview with Corey Brotherston. He kind of interviewed
me. Yeah, we know Corey.
And he sort of, he talked to me. He goes, oh, you know, I love Fallen Heroes. And then we got onto the second book. He said, I've got to say, dude, I read the second book. He said, what happened? He said, shit got dark. You got dark. And both books, I lost people. So, you know, in during the course of writing the first book, I passed away. And then during the course of the second book, my dad and my oldest brother passed away. Mm-hmm. And you go into a hole with those things, you know, you go into like an emotional kind of black hole anyway. I mean, I can't speak for everyone. I can only speak for myself. Mm-hmm. But you, from a creative point of view, the way I dug myself out of those holes was to basically use that pain, and the pain then goes into the story, you know? And you're right. You're in a headspace, you know? Yeah. And I think now that I've kind of finished this book and I'm kind of, oh, I really need to finish the third book. I'm like, At the moment, I don't want to put myself into that headspace because I'm kind of, I just don't want to be there. You know, I kind of, it's hard enough as it is without putting, because it's a bit difficult to get yourself out of it sometimes, you know?
Yeah, true. And like to the point that you brought up, you know, if I was adapting what I've just said, you know, I wanted to create something completely silly and crazy and like, you know, Teletubbies in kids in comic format. I mean that's nightmarish actually now that I've said it out loud, but you
it's
know
bad if, enough in porn
but if you know if I was to unfortunately like suffer that sort of loss and stuff, could I then go back to this thing that is so, you know?
But there's two things here, man. I think some of the greatest art in the history of the world has been created by people who pour their heart and soul into it. I think there's that. Yeah. I think that's important. I think if we forget that, I think we lose part of what art is about.
Yeah.
But also, I think as well is it's kind of work in a way. As much as we all really enjoy it, you know, it's kind of work. And sometimes when you throw yourself into work, you forget the more difficult moments in your life. Certainly in my past, you know, I've thrown myself into work and, you know, worked a lot just because it distracts you a little bit. I think, you know.
Definitely.
The thing about comics is, like, you know, people can put their head down, distract them, and then, you know, I think that speaks to why we're seeing so many Kickstarters and comics this year.
I'm super jealous of you guys who can actually draw, because I try and draw something at lunchtime. I've done it over Inktober, and man, that makes the time pass and the worries and the work of the world disappears while you're trying to draw something, you know. I think it's a great thing to do.
Way back in the day, my original plan when I was at school, I wanted to be a artist. I wanted to be a cartoonist. And again, it's one of those things. I needed to kind of have that inspirational teacher it was a school in North London. You just didn't have it. You just didn't. most teachers were just telling you weren't going to amount to anything. So, you know, but I kept drawing. Drawing was something I kind of stopped drawing pretty much in my sort of early 30s.
Right.
Because it got to a choice between drawing and writing, and I really wanted to focus on my writing. But what I loved about drawing, which is what you said, is I never sort of drew sort of cartoon, you know, strips as such. I would just draw a picture, you know.
Yeah.
But it could take me like a week, 2 weeks, on just working on that one picture. But when I was there, and I worked a lot with like colour pencils and stuff like that, the world just melted away.
Yeah, it's great for that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think creativity in general, I know I've just said about the doom and gloom of it, but, you know, fuck that. The positive side of that is when you're in it, even if you're in that dark space, when you're in it, there is no... there's no feeling like it when you're creating and you get an idea and it suddenly flows, or you're sitting down, you're plotting out story, and suddenly it starts
When you surprise yourself, together. I think, as well, Barry, when you're writing something, you think, where on earth did that come from? That's, you know, obviously we all love patting ourselves on the back, but do you know what I mean? We sometimes think, wow, you know, that's really gone somewhere. And I think it's an exercise in getting the interior to the exterior. So we've all got those ideas. It's just trying to get them coalesced into a story, get them, you know, down on paper with the right descriptions in the right way that, you know, we've all got these great ideas, but trying to get them out there onto the paper. So that really cheers me up. That really gets me fired up when I can do that as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say as well, having been recently at the start of this year, I went to an art class, Barry, you're like this. Quite MILF heavy, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And GILF, which is obviously more my sort of age now.
Yeah. And that'll be the name of Tony's new book out in 2020.
GILF heavy.
GILF heavy.
GILF. GILF Hunter.
I think that may be taken as a copyright. Yeah, not if you explored it too much, but I believe, that might work.
Yeah. I mean, some of the craziness that you see are popping up, even on crowdfunding campaigns, you're like, what?
Can I just say, when I went to pledge for Viper, you know, when it sort of says, you know, more projects are coming to life. So I just looked, and literally as I looked, there was another two that I thought, you know what, I'm probably going to do that. And one of them was like called Unicorn the Vampire Hunter. And it is literally what it says on the tin. It's a unicorn who hunts vampires.
Oh, my God. Barry, I was about to abstain from Kickstarter. Because it's just costing too much. And now you drop that on me?
No, I'm sick of fucking unicorns. As you will notice, I'll send you a copy of my new comic, Barry, where someone has sex with a unicorn. Because I think we need to put an end to this unicorn shit. I'm done.
No way, man. I'm going to kickstart right this second.
It's one of them ones where you see it and you think, nah, that's bollocks. And you click on the link. I was like, no, it's a unicorn who hunts vampires.
Oh my God.
And I think it's that thing of just when you think, you know, we've hit a ceiling of creativity, someone just throws something at you. And I think that's one of the great things about doing the podcast is, you know, even when you feel a little bit down, you get an email and someone's just sent you something, and you just go, okay, that, yeah, I'm back in the game.
It's a real thrill to having a favorite creator and him sending you, or that she's sending you something early, and you think, oh, I'm the only person to see this so far. How brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of that as well. I sometimes selfishly really enjoy that. Yeah, yeah. Good.
I've literally just checked out the Kickstarter. I can't believe this exists.
It would be all right if the horn was made of wood. Then it would be right, wouldn't it? It would work.
Does it need to... I mean, it all depends on your vampire lore, though, doesn't it?
They're not real, are they? I keep forgetting.
Oh dear! I tell you what, though, it seems like it's a bit deeper than the title suggests. Surely, yes.
What was that comic we were going to do, Vince, where the horn came out of the horse's bumhole? Which we were going to do?
Oh god! No, it was something.
Bummy corn or something. No, we're going to do. We bummy decided. Corn. That's new copyright.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't be nicking that, Barry. No. That's my idea.
Runicorn.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to have to worry.
Runicorn. That's
it. Runicorn?
I think you might be right.
I don't know how we got to that name. Oh, it's been so long. Oh, so long. There's one from the vaults.
That's when it all started to go bad. We thought we were on this highfalutin podcast back then, Barry, and I think we started saying things like that, and it just went to shit.
Hey, wow. You know, we've had one or two episodes that have been quite.
Oh man, we do all right, babes. Yeah, I got to tell you, yeah. Look at the Durf episode. How highfalutin we were on that one.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, but we still
had a laugh. I don't know if we've ever done a highfalutin episode.
Get off! I saw you at Bix walking down the stairs, high fiving everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I was exactly. God, you were. That was our very first panel we ever did.
Yeah, I was there.
God, Jesus, I was on a sick before that panel started. Because I was genuinely like,
did you ever go? Who's the girl you had with you at that one? I can't remember the lady.
Oh, that one. Oh no, that was Stace.
Oh, was Stacey? Was it? Okay.
Yeah, that was Stacey. Yeah. And it's a shame because her she used to do Small Press, Big Mouth on our feed. That podcast was just legend. I loved that podcast.
Didn't she do something with Izz McAuliffe as well? Didn't they do one or something?
No, that's. that's the other Stace, which is that's Stace Whittle. Bob.
Okay. Right.
Yes, yeah, Stace Whittle. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not allowed to mention that podcast because I listened to it once. She made me promise never to listen to it again.
Okay.
Oh.
It was very good, I might add, but she told me.
Yeah, that's the way to get listeners.
Yeah.
If anyone knows how to get listeners, please let us know.
Let us know. More musical episodes.
Yeah.
Always.
Well, that's. I mean, Barry's going to do a musical number in a minute. He doesn't know about it, but no, of course.
No one likes my singing. Least of all me.
Got the voice of an angel, Barry. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, a dead angel.
Yeah, a weeping angel.
Yeah. Whenever you look away, I start singing. And when you look at me, I stop.
So, I mean, obviously, you speak about like lots of different things on Geek Syndicate, but you've always like had your sort of toe in the independent sort of publishing and comics waters anyway. You know, I've seen you at a few cons. I see, well, we saw you at 2000 AD 40th, and like been at Thought Bubbles and stuff.
Yeah.
What sort of I mean, this is a big question, I think, for all of us. But what do you think is the kind of state of independent comics at the moment?
Oh wow,
that was a big one, wasn't it?
No preparations.
It just got real.
It just got real.
Because I think obviously everyone will expect us to go, everything's great, there's more comics than ever, blah, 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 which there is a certain amount of that. But as we know with anything that becomes more popular or bigger, there's always the other, you know, there's two sides to every coin, isn't there? There's the, I mean, I think social media has certainly been a very interesting side of comics this year. I've never seen it so... I don't want to say controversial. How would you describe comic social media?
Annoying.
And you wish you went to controversial now, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a strange, for me, it's a strange world for indie comics. You know, I mean, I'm still always on the hunt for the comic that I and the creator that I've never heard of. And you know, and discovering those gems that we never heard of. Maybe if there's a unicorn who hunts vampires, then you know.
Can I say that I think it's gone from being about the, and this may be the crowdfunding fault, or it may be the influence of other people, but I think it's gone from being about the art form and more about the promo. Recently,
yes,
I see people. It's more about promotion than it is about, oh, look at this, you know, this is brilliant, or this is an influence, or have you seen this, or. Which does it? There is elements of that as well, but I think the promotional part of it is really taken off in the last 12 months.
Hmm. Yeah.
Often to a fine, and you know I'm fine with it. And you've got to promote your own books, but often to quite a cringy
because
level now.
That's also like a part of being a creator and stuff.
Yeah, of course it is, and we all accept that.
Yeah. Well,
and we've done it, and you know Dan's doing it the right way with his current Kickstarter. I think he's, you know, making it interesting, and he's got a great video and stuff. But I think sometimes it almost becomes a bit obvious and cringy to me at the moment. Yeah, that's what I feel.
I think it's really difficult, the promo side of things, because obviously I've seen it from both sides of the table.
Yeah, I assume.
I think, and certainly there's, you know, sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, Dave and I should do an episode of GS, which is almost a kind of do's and don'ts when you're approaching places like ours, like you, or, you know, other straight up sort of review sites of what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, you know, because we get some stuff sent through and it just goes back out the door because of the way they've kind of approached us with it, you know. And I know how hard it is to promote something, and trying to find the off switch so you're not over promoting it. But then sometimes that vicious circle of like, well, maybe the reason why it's not been successful is because I didn't promote it enough. And then you throw all your promotion at it, and then people then sort of saying to you, you over promoted that, mate. You shouldn't be on Twitter every 5 minutes talking about it. And it's trying to find that sort of sweet spot. And I think sometimes what I've seen with some comics that have become really successful, there's that element of luck. They've just tapped that right site,
or they've got the right person to retweet them or help promote them or get a pull list from. Yeah, I agree, man, completely. And I think there is an element of luck to it. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt there, Barry,
but you must get this on your podcast as well, is you don't hear from people for a long time. And then suddenly they're all over you about how brilliant you are, and you think, right, tick, tick, tick. Oh, here's your new book to promote. You know what I mean? It's a bit like that sometimes. And I think the cynical me of, we've done this for a while now, I think we get a bit cynical about that sometimes, you know? Yeah.
Also, as well, I don't expect people to listen to the podcast for us to review their stuff. I don't. And to a certain extent, I don't even consider what we do as reviews. You know, we talk about what we like, what we don't like, and, you know, we'll get into it. But, you know, we're not trained reviewers or anything. We're just a couple of guys who like what we like, you know. Yeah. And that's never changed. But I do expect a certain amount of... that you've at least gone to a site and looked at the about page.
Yeah,
you know the I've had stuff sent in where I know it's, and even that I know is, you know, I know some people have done the copy and paste sent to multiple. I know that because I've done that, but at least remember to change the name, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Or use BCC. So, you know, I don't see 100 other sites on your CC because you've sent it to all those sites, but you've tried to word your email in such a way that, you know, you're contacting just me, but you're not. You know, it's just those little things here and there that just kind of put you off a little bit. Sometimes I'll still read those things because the blurb's really good. But we started a thing on the site which was called Elevator Pitch. And we opened it up to people and we basically said, you know, you get in touch and all you have to do is you come up with a sentence or a paragraph that, you know, pitches your comic, and then the next question is kind of why should people buy it, and then they put a little bit of blurb there, and then we would put a little preview of the comic, and then we put what people could get, and it was kind of our way of trying to cover all of the comics that we couldn't review.
That's our shout out section, man. That's how we do
And you're putting it in sort of their hands. But, you know, but even when you do that, the amount of people that didn't take us up on it, where I would reply to them and go, you know, I'll see if we can review it, but in the meantime, you know, check out our Elevator Pitch. And it's, you know, it's basically, it's free promotion for you know, and people wouldn't necessarily sort of take you up on it. So it's always a bit sort of tough, but I think in terms of the state of the industry, I think creatively, I think it's going great guns. Because there's a lot of content out there, a lot of new stuff, a lot of new people that are coming through, and a lot of different types of comics is what I'm seeing.
There's a whole range. I think that's a huge thing at the moment. Yeah, there's a big range of stuff, and be different subject matter, different genres, different approaches, and different quality as well. I think we're seeing everything. There's there's no gate for anyone to have to walk through to get into it, which I think is great at the moment.
I still think there's a gate. Not to get into it, but I think when you start to want to be more, I don't know how the best way to put it, not part of the scene, but kind of, you know, you want to get more of a presence, I guess, at conventions and on panels and that sort of stuff. I still think there is a...
Who's guarding that one, do you think, Barry?
I'm not going to name names.
No, I mean, just in general terms. Do you think it's indie, or do you think it's fans themselves, or, you know?
I think it's a bit of a collective thing. So I think sometimes, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I don't want it to be sort of misconstrued, but I think even when people are putting together panels and stuff like that, I think there's, you know, you're influenced by things. And I think you kind of draw... What I'm seeing is there's a lot of the times is they're being drawn from the same gene pool. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, I agree. And I think we're suffering. I think London certainly, I know you visit London quite a lot, don't you, Barry?
To
good comics events. I think London suffers from being a fractured group of fans. And I think there's certainly a snobbish element at little bits of it. I think so. You know, I mean, I often call it on here the gosh comics crowd. And I think there's a bit of that with that, you know? I think you have to be in a scene. Yeah, Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What I've never liked as well is just anyone, you know, when it comes to these scenes, I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. I don't like it. You know, I try to be open to everything, every genre, you know.
I think we do on this show, mate.
You know, because there may be something that I thought, I wouldn't read that, and I've read it and I've loved it, and now I'm like, well, just give me whatever. But sometimes there's a certain, I think it's the wrong word for it, but snobbishness. And this comes from any particular scene, you know, like, oh, you're doing those superhero comics, are you? Oh, there.
Yeah.
They're just
That's been a really common phrase we've heard a lot. Not so much. I think it's now like, oh, no, I mostly do graphic novels. Or no, oh, I only do zines. And we're like, right, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
They're all comics, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes when you're at a table and you do your pitch of what it is, you could just see the nose go up, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's like you say, that's kind of the same in sort of any scene.
Yeah.
But you do sometimes find in certain situations, like, it's the same sort of genre of, it's not even a genre of comic, it's just a particular kind of, I've got a way to describe it. So when I was used to art school, and we always used to get given this sort of fine art where it'd basically be a bowl of fruit and a table, and you'd have to draw it, and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I was always drawing like superheroes. I was drawing like Captain America, like holding a bowl of fruit. I was a mouthy shit anyway. So I would find ways to interpret what they're giving me so I could do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I remember a teacher having a real go at me about it, and saying, you know, your stuff is good, your quality is good, blah, blah, blah. So, but, you know, it's not fine art, and we do not do, you know, we do fine art in this class. We don't do that stuff. I don't want to ever see you doing that stuff again, you know. And it really kind of put me off sort of art in general, because I thought that was all, because I wanted to go to art college and stuff like that, and it put me off. I didn't go because I kind of, well, else I didn't get the grades. But
that's also sad as well, because if we think about some of these artists that we absolutely love, you know, they've got so much education in all of these different art areas. Just because they draw an absolutely awesome Iron Man suit doesn't mean they don't know about the masters or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of the great artists that we've known, they can turn their hand to a superhero comic, you know, a spy drama. They could do designs for a cartoon. They can do illustrations for a magazine. You know, some of the great, you know, Gil Kane, Jack Kirby, all these people, they could do all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of the best, you know, some of the best comics I've read in terms of storytelling, characterization, blah, 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 in any medium that I've, you know, have been like Capes and Tights.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff,
really.
You know.
And let's face it, that's just a part of the story. You look at the X-Men.
Exactly.
The X-Men's an amazing story, but it's also a soap opera. It's also a romance. It's also a horror film at points. You know, there's all sorts of things going on there. It just happens to be about superheroes. You know.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I'm a great defender of that as an area of comics, man. I think we forget that. We forget a lot.
Yeah. You know. And also, you don't have to make it completely dark, deadly, and serious to be an important message. You know, people go, oh yeah, when comics get serious, look at this dark, brooding Batman story. It's like, well, no, it's not just the Batman stuff that does the dark, you know, the serious stuff. They can do it in any genre. If you handle a topic well, you know, whether it be what's going on in the world, an illness, like an event, or, you know, any kind of thing, you should be able to do it in sort of any kind of genre, really. And superheroes, because of the nature of them, they're in a good position because they have a lot of younger readers. You're in a good position to also inform people and, you know, and be a positive influence. We've all been influenced by the comics that we've read when we were younger.
Yeah. I like to think that Stan and Jack's attitude and Steve Ditko's attitude towards, you know, the nuclear race, racism, young people, has educated us all in a way that we probably didn't realise at the time. But it's there's a bit of osmosis, isn't there, into us being, you know, probably better, more tolerant people. You know, people forget that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there was a story, and you know, I grew up reading the old school, like you say, Jack Kirby, Stanley. I grew up reading those because my older brothers were getting them, getting the old Marvels and stuff back in the '70s, and then I was getting them as like hand-me-downs and reading them. And I remember there was a storyline. I think it was with the Defenders, and they Luke Cage was in it, and they were fighting this group, and I think they were called Sons of the Serpent, and they were effectively the KKK, really.
Yeah,
and it's a spoiler, but it's a comic that was years and years ago. But what they caught the leader and they unmasked him, and the leader was actually a black guy. And it was just, and then this whole thing about self-love and self-loathing, and actually he hated the race, cause, you know, he hated his own race because of the way they treated him and blah, blah. And at the time, as a kid, it didn't really, I got it on a certain level, but not on the deeper level. And then I read it again as an adult and I was like, wow, you know. Yeah. But that's a comic where you've got Luke Cage, as in old school Luke Cage with chain around his waist, and you've got Damon Hellstrom. He's got like a cape and no top on. But yeah, it's just really deep. Do you know what I mean? It's just really, really deep.
Yeah. Well, you're going to look at McGregor's Panther's Rage, man. That's the same. I mean, I learned about, you know, the racism and the politics of the Southern States of America by reading Don McGregor's comics. You know, it's like. Yeah. That's what got me started on an interest in that sort of area of, you know, politics and stuff. It's incredible, really.
Yeah.
And there's people like you, right? And cycling back to what you said there, people who poo-poo it don't know it, do they? They don't know the history of it. They don't know the importance of it. It's a shame. It is a real shame.
Yeah. I think sometimes when stuff are handled like that, it's so much more effective than. I think there's a certain amount of soapboxing that happens with a lot of. Sort of comics writing now, which preaching rather than like, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't know about that story from that Defenders, but immediately I was like, wow, that, I mean, just you saying it sounded like a powerful story that I need to check out now because I love the Defenders.
We're big fans.
Whereas sometimes like I've seen panels of someone just having a go at Iron Man.
Because if Dan was here, he would have brought this up, wouldn't he?
You know, and there seems to be a lot of speeches that, when you read it, it's like this doesn't feel like it's the character. It feels like the writer trying to,
speak through your characters.
I'm trying to say it in the right kind of way. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously,
it takes you out of the story sometimes. I think there's ways of doing it and there's ways not to doing it. And I think there's a lot of comics in the 60s and 70s and the 80s who got it exactly right. But I think suddenly if I'm watching someone completely out of character and completely suddenly in the story give this big speech about, I don't know, whatever's happening in America at the time, which generally seems to be about, you know, it's always a worldwide phenomena, Marvel Comics, but it always generally seems to be about happening in America. Then you're like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
It just completely takes me out of it sometimes, you know, and it can be from all different political angles, as we now see, don't we? Yeah. We see what's going on, the dramas that we see.
And I think also, this is... sorry to cut you off, all right? I think this is an important point, because when you're doing these speeches or whatever in a comic, that's all well and good, you know, if you want to write that speech. What kid is going to read that? And because I'm getting more and more passionate about kids getting into comic books. As we did. And it feels like a lot of the bigger companies, it's harder and harder for kids. Like you say, Barry, when you're saying you pick up an issue and you don't know where you are with it. You're like, I'm not going to read this.
Yeah.
I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
That's a problem. That's a problem. We're here because we read comics when we were kids and it affected us into everything that we've created, whether it be comics, writing, whatever. I just feel like some of those characters that we talk love
about,
that have now
we talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
We talk about what we read when we're 12, 13, 14. It becomes something that you're invested in for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Because there's whole studies on it, you know.
But I think also as well, like, certainly for me, sort of growing up sort of reading superhero comics. I had sort of mum and dad were very good at kind of, you know, giving us a kind of moral sort of compass and stuff. But at the same time, you know, there was four of us, you know, me and my sort of three older brothers. So, you know, it's a lot. And I was the youngest, and it's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
And, you know, they weren't always, you know, with us 24/7. So we had, you know, I had comics a lot of the time. And
yeah.
for me, that it was those comics that really solidified my moral compass in that, you know, sort of growing up, I knew certain things, you know, not just right and wrong, but what yeah. other people might be doing and what other people might be saying. But that's, you know, that's not right because, you know, Doctor Strange wouldn't allow that to, you know, not on his watch. You know what yeah. I mean? And that sort of stuff. And comics really kind of helped me with that. And then sort of things like, you know, Superman and stuff like that. And just teaching you to kind of don't be a dick, be a yeah. good person, you know? Yeah. And I think because we've all grown up with those comics and we, you know, we've taken those hopefully morals with us. I think the danger now is we're leaving the kids behind us. I know yeah. there's other things that kids can do now, and you know there's a lot more.
Yeah, a lot of them do like heroin. Time. You know,
yeah,
crack yeah, or exactly. heroin. They got the.
You know, there's a lot yeah. more draw at a time and stuff. But I just think that the and also I don't buy the. Also to a certain extent, I don't say buy that argument because you look at manga. You know, and manga's huge. And I think with you look at your DC and your Marvels now, and they're even bringing out different lines for kids. And I'm kind of like, but if you'd done it right, you wouldn't need to have done that.
Yeah, this is something I think I can feel Vince circling around to this because this is something. Was yeah. it you or Dan brought this up?
I would like that. To bring up yeah. Something. No, yeah. I want to put it across correctly.
Sounded like we planned that. That went
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like a well-oiled machine. Donny Cates, a writer that I am a fan of. I've mentioned his indie books quite a few times. I know he's a big two writer now. He's a big Marvel writer now. He posted on Twitter a couple of days ago. What are some of your favourite Marvel all ages books out there? I have a nephew who I want to bring into Marvel, but my books aren't great for him. Ha ha. Now. I have a
make a phone call, my
that,
friend.
That's a yeah. problematic tweet for me. I mean, and this is nothing to do with him, but it's like Marvel books, shouldn't they be for everyone? Isn't that?
Well, should he at least know of them?
And I, of course, this would probably leads into a thread that has grown where lots of people are saying, you know, I mean, I can see on this screenshot I've got here, like people recommending Miss Marvel and Miles Morales and stuff like that. So there's yeah. going to be a list of titles that people will immediately mention. But I just, you know, back to the original tweet, it's like you say, Barry, Marvel shouldn't have we have an all ages line. You should be an all ages line. There shouldn't be. I mean, you should an all ages line that has like a Max series. If the grumpy grown ups who want Punisher to murder a thousand people, they can read
in a nice BD yeah. album or something like that. Yeah, yeah that would be my ideal. But yeah, we should all be reading them, and otherwise we're cutting off our nose to spite our face because the audience is shrinking. It's going to shrink and go away.
Yeah. It's just I don't know. So I'm getting more and more like sort of like look, Marvel just.
I said to you, Vince. I read Marvel comics. I spend hundreds of pounds on Marvel comics every month, and sometimes I open them up because I'm a lunatic. And sometimes I open them up, and I ain't got a fucking clue what's going on.
Yeah. And there's levels to it. A Jonathan Hickman book, you need to read it from issue one because otherwise
you got to read all 23 issues of Sword of X, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you need to have an hour conversation with him before you actually start reading. Yeah, just to get there.
Please listen to this 4-hour podcast with John Santres before you read this comic. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I like Jonathan Hickman stuff, but yeah, it's just I know when I pick up one of his, I'm like, right,
yeah,
okay, here we go.
Yeah, you need to be in the right mind, right frame of mind. Yeah. It's not like just picking up, you know, Secret Wars and reading that, is it? It's,
yeah.
I mean, the original.
And certainly. You know, I've read that stuff and loved it, you know, because it's a different flavour. But I think away from that stuff, if you're talking about the broader 616, isn't it? That's the normal universe. The broader 616 should be open to everyone. We need another sort of Secret Wars, like the one where it's just like a bunch of heroes. You know, I know that there was a... Was there a battle? What's the Battleverse? I was about to say where heroes are dropped on a planet and then... They have to just fight lots of things. It should be
Contest of Champions, or it was, yeah.
Yeah, some silly fun. And
I think part of the problem is that even if they did that and said, you know, this is it, this is where we sort all that out, A, and seeing I'm sounding really bitter now, do you know what I mean? A, it probably won't last,
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, and B, it probably still won't be for kids.
I think the problem I think the problem as well, number three, Barry, is we're stuck in the direct market loop. We're not getting out of the direct market. I mean, kids ain't going into Gosh and buying comics often, are they? You know, we need to get comics out there and deliverable to them, and do it at the same time that we change this tactic and make them available and easy for them to read and, you know, readable. And yeah, I just think I think the direct market is killing us. I genuinely think that. I think we're so ghettoized now into where we get our comics.
And I've always sort of, you know, one of the things that I would love to do if obviously comic shops had limitless money, which they don't, you know, they're struggling like everyone else, you know, would be to see that massive shift where you are stocking comics by genre. It feels more like a bookshop. You are having maybe a coffee shop built into there. Maybe you're having more sort of panels in the, I know Gosh does some of this stuff as well, but you know, just to make it more accessible to your random passerby of a couple of kids, and having them at cinema, so when they do come out at the latest Marvel, they're able to pick up not just a random Marvel comic, but a comic which is a sort of standalone that they can just get into,
like an epic collection or something like that, or I agree. And I know God bless them, Orbital used to do it, they would do comics at cinemas, and I know the cinema in Harrogate is actually the place that houses the comic shop, which I think is great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
I think that's really good. And I think you're right, man. I think we're not taking advantage of that enough. We're not jumping in with both feet. But then again, neither are the companies.
No.
You know, why isn't there an advert for a Marvel comic before an Avengers movie? Think of the sales.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, the fact that those films make gazillion dollars and yet the comic industry as a whole is dwindling.
Struggling.
And the comic industry is doing well elsewhere.
They do a real poor job of tying into like whatever film's coming out and stuff. You know, the tie-in books.
We've got a Shang-Chi movie coming out next year, and they just decided that the new series is going to be a mini series. So it'll be finished by then. What is going on with the world?
I mean, it's not rocket science, really, is it?
Yeah.
We
should be sick to death of seeing these characters that have got films. We should be complaining about it and just instead of going, "Where's the comic?"
Yeah. Anyway, so we've come a long way from our discussion about how you're doing under lockdown. That's gone quite a stretch there, guys. But I was gonna ask you, Barry. Are you one of these guys who can work from home? Are you? So, is that maybe part of it? Because I know a lot of people I work with. I have an office, so I'm busier now than I've ever been, to be fair, work wise. But I have an office, so I go to their office and I work, and I keep it separate from my home life, which is kind of my comics life. Do you think that's a problem for people? Is they're working from home and they're reading computer screens all day, and you know they don't get a chance to relax because their workplace becomes their home.
Yeah, I think for me it's different because I have to preface this because whenever I say it, people go, "Oh, it's all right for you, you're rich and blah blah blah." But I have a garden office.
Okay.
But that's because like when my dad passed away, he was the last link to the family home. So and then in the will, basically the home came to me and my brothers. So we sold the house. And with my share, I had a garden office because I was like, I'm not going to piss that money up the wall. This is, you know, my inheritance from my parents. So I wanted to do something with it. So, you know, this is before all the COVID, is like 2 years ago. So we had like a little garden office, which for me is great. Come in, I do the podcast and I write in here. And then obviously, I'd started to work from like a day a week. And then when COVID hit, it was like, right, now you're on it. And for me, to a certain extent, I am able to sort of distance it because I can kind of come into the office, do my day's work, go out of the office. But I think it's still, even with doing that, though, you still end up, you know, sometimes I'm starting work much earlier than I would normally do. And sometimes I'm...
It does seem to be creeping up on us a bit, doesn't it? Where you used to get into work for 8 or 9 or whatever it was. Now, it's sort of, there's kind of an expectation that the time that you would have been travelling into work, you're now working during.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
It is weird, and it is that kind of trying to carve out your work time, you know, and sort of saying to yourself, actually, you know, whatever my hours are, I'm going to do my hours, and, you know, creating that workspace for yourself. But I think because maybe it's different for creative people, I don't know, but I think because I've been writing since I was 11 years old, so I've always been working on my own in my own space, be it in a bedroom, in a lounge, wherever. I find it. I find it a bit easier to sort of separate, because, you know, I know that if I get up in the morning, I do maybe an hour, 2 hours of writing. Sometimes it's an hour of writing, and maybe if I've got a podcast to edit, I'll then sort of crack on with that. But I know I've got to be done by this time. Before, it's because I had to leave to go to work, but now it's because I have to, you know, I set myself that time, and then I'm done.
I do the lunchtime thing. So I always make sure I have an hour for lunch, and it gives me the chance to write or catch up on, you know, the podcast or reviews or whatever it's going to be. I do that. Yeah, I think you've got to give it to yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Give yourself, every day, give yourself a little present. That's what Agent Cooper says, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't think he means having a wank.
Maybe. But there has to be structure, I think, doesn't it? Yeah, you can't. I think structure is now more important than ever, isn't it, really, to just the working environment, your working day. And, you know, God bless all those people that that are doing this and have children, or, you know, obviously trying to do this, or maybe you've got sick loved ones, or whatever your situation is. We hope you're all doing all right at the end of the day. So
I mean, Dave has three kids, so, you know, the times, I think the funniest, it happened last month. You are, I'm just saying, because I think we left it in anyway. When we were recording, his phone went, and it was one of his kids. I think she's only 10 or something. It was one of his kids ringing to tell him to keep the noise down because she was trying to sleep. And then, oh, no, that's it. No, she came in and then told him to keep noise down. And then he was like, okay, I'm sorry. And then she went off. And then we carried on. And then it must have been about half an hour later, his phone went. And then it was her ringing him to say, look, you know, you're taking the piss now. I've already been in once.
I record on the top floor of the house. And it's, whilst I obviously insisted that it's now the comic room, it's the bigger bedroom, you know. So on either side of my room are two neighbours' bedroom. And we record quite late at night sometimes. And one of them said, I could hear you laughing again yesterday. Yeah. I'm sorry about that. You know.
Tone down the humour.
Yeah, at least it wasn't anything else. My sobbing does get quite loud.
Yeah, you're a loud crier.
Yeah.
How do I know that? Oh dear. So what, obviously you've got the novel. What stage is that at the moment? You obviously finished it, and I know you've been out and, like, you know, proofing and stuff and all that kind of stuff. What's your hopes for that?
So I've been I'm editing, but what I've done is I've been sending it off to try and get an agent, trying to get a publisher. And what I wasn't prepared for is the last time I kind of went down this properly was, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago. Because obviously I self-publish, and I'd forgotten how soul-shattering it can be. Not just because of the rejection, because obviously that in itself is its own sort of reward. It's the weight, you know, and it is the fact that for a lot of, and I get it, it's because they're busy and they get inundated, but, you know, it's the fact, it's things like, you know, if you don't hear anything from us within 10 weeks or 3 months, you know, basically it's a no. And, you know, you won't get anything. You just wait for that date to pass and go, okay, that's another one gone then, you know.
Yeah.
Or you get your standard rejection letters and stuff like that. And I'd completely forgotten. I'd completely forgotten what that was like, and I hadn't really prepared myself for it. But my reason, I am planning that if I really don't get lucky, lucky is the wrong way to put it, but if I don't get an age group, that I will self-publish it at some stage, because I want to put it out there. It's
yeah.
In some ways, it's probably the most important story to me I've ever done for myself personally, just because I kind of wanted to. I don't think you see kids like this doing these types of things in books, and it was really important to me to do something where I think in one of my pitches I said, you know, what I was trying to say is, you know, it ain't fucking Hogwarts. They don't go to Hogwarts. They don't go to like a magic school. But you know, a lot of, not all, but there's, you know, there's this, a lot of middle grade, be it fiction, whether it that's comics, whether that's film, whether it's books, it works on that idea of being special. You know, it works on that idea of you have a special talent or a special power, or
the chosen
you
one,
have
that
a,
kind of,
yeah, you have a lineage, or you know, or you end up at a place which is special school and whatever. And I wanted to do something where the kids weren't special. It's the wrong way to put it, you know. Yeah. But you know, their skills.
They're normal kids.
I know what you mean. It's like, normal. I'm sick of every time you see an alien, he's always a king or he's a prince or something.
Yeah,
you know, it always seems to be that way, doesn't it? Where's Joe Public anymore? I know it's something Pat talks about a lot, and Uncle Pat Mills talks about, is that where are just the ordinary people? Joe Public, you know, war stories always seem to be like about the major, or you know, they're never about just normal people. Yeah, I think that's important. Yeah.
And I think it was, and sadly, you know, it will get compared to Stranger Things, though, just because it's set in the 80s.
You say like kids set in the 80s. Yeah, that's a shorthand, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there was no real...
People are dumb, mate. That's the problem. Yeah.
You know, but the reason for me, it's set in the 80s because I was a kid in the 80s, so I could write. Yeah. I could write kids in the 80s. That was the main starting point for it, you know. So my hope is I can find an agent or find a publisher. And if not, my hope will be to self-publish at some stage. I have a kind of date in my mind, a sort of cut-off date where I'll go, right, you know, I'm off, I'm going to do my own thing. And that's the beauty. I think that is the beauty of indie publishing.
Oh, and I think self-publishing is completely and utterly respectable now. You look at some of the people putting just Kindle books out and making a lot of money out of it, being well respected. I think there's a lot of people there because of the, often for some companies, the minuscule amount of money you make on a book compared to how much you would make self-publishing it. I think the network's there. The networks, it never used to be that we had access to promote a book, didn't we? We used to have to hire a promoter, but social media and the internet has opened all that up now. Yeah, definitely. I've got to tell you, man, as well, is having come from working at a company that is half comics and half kids books, the kids books is the most cutthroat business of them, both of them, easily. Fucking, they don't hold back, those people. Yeah. It's a really competitive market. I'm sure you'll be fine, but it's a really competitive market that, you know, it's comics, it's nothing compared to comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really isn't.
Yeah, no, and I think I think as well, you know, when you create anything, if you've come away from it and you've enjoyed, I've kind of already won. I hate to sound that kind of cheesy Hallmark card guy. Do you know what I mean? But I had so much fun. I've had so much fun doing it.
That's the point, man.
You know, and I think it was. I don't know who said it, but it's kind of like, you know, once I've put it out there, that's my job done.
Create for yourself is the whole thing, Barry, I think, a lot of the time. If we're creating for other people, it comes across as false. As long as we're happy and we're creating to the point we think we've been successful, that's off. Yeah, you're right, you've won. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a difficult. I think sometimes it's very difficult. And I think in this world of social media where everything is on display and you're always on, you know, you there's no switch off button, I don't think, anymore. Sometimes it is difficult to do that. I think sometimes it's hard to not be that person that's always on Goodreads or Amazon or whatever, looking to see if you, I know, because I do that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It's hard, but it helps if you can sort of tell yourself, actually, the experience that I had was a good experience, and I really enjoyed it. And I think I've been quite lucky because I've been able to interact with people that have kind of read my stuff and experienced my stuff. And, you know, it never gets old when someone tells you they've enjoyed your work. and they've enjoyed a specific part of your work, you know, and that kind of tells you that, you know, that they've kind of really invested in what you've done, you know. And I think that's the joy of, I think, podcasting, I think, is when you get something, you get sent that comic that you're like, you know what, everyone needs to know about this fucking comic.
Yeah.
We have that multiple times a year, don't we, B?
And it's not long before, like, a couple of comments becomes a community. It's as simple as that. And, like, you know, I mean, much like you guys, we've got a wonderful group of people that listen to us on the regs.
They're not all great.
What percentage? 2% are great? Would you say 2%?
Yeah, 2%. That's being generous.
Sorry. There's a percentage of our listeners that are great.
We got a couple of murderers, at least one we're sure of.
But we're hoping to leave it until we maybe capture him on an episode. That would be quite an exclusive, won't it? Capturing a murderer. I mean, because then we cross over into the crime podcast genre, and that's where the money is, people. Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cross-pollination, I think that's what
John knows. We love him. You know we love you.
Yeah. So don't come after us.
Yeah.
But I mean, this conversation has been
ace. Good stuff, Barry. Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots to think about, and obviously Barry's got exciting. Well, I mean, I can't. I've read a very small taste of the book, and it is great. It's gonna be a great book. I can't wait to read more. I'm not gonna try and get that out of him. But of course, there's the Unseen Shadows universe and stuff. And as you say, I mean, if people want to check out your work and see what all the fuss is about, because there is a lot of fuss, where do people get your books, the prose, the comics, and everything?
You can get everything pretty much from unseenshadows.com. There should be, because we've got the sections there for the books and the comics and the Choose Your Own Adventure and the audio. There's a 4-part audio drama, which is free. So...
I mean, look, we just talked about a lot of writing of prose and like, obviously, the world today. And we haven't even covered the fact that he's done all of that with Unseen Shadows. That's another show in the future, because I know, obviously, with Unseen Shadows, you were creating a universe that other creators have jumped into and stuff.
Yes.
So I think our universe building will be the next episode where we get Barry back
on. Oh, good idea. Yeah.
Because he knows a lot about universe building. And
he also knows a lot about sexy unicorns, which I'm quite proud of him for.
We need
I know very little about wallpapering. I'm just putting that out there in case people think, you know, start getting emails saying any doubts, dude. I don't do that, so.
That's a shame.
Oh, dear.
But I like to manage expectations.
I mean, people have low expectations when it comes to this show. If they've reached this point, we consider it a success.
Yeah.
But Barry's with us for the rest of the show. Dan Butcher has been quiet, and you're probably thinking, where's Dan? Because we did cover a couple of topics that I know Dan would have had but he would have piped in on as well. But he had to leave us.
He did. Yeah. Sadly, he's not died.
Should we keep it a secret why he's gone? You know, just create a bit of mystery.
He asked not to mention it because it's personal.
Yeah, it's personal, but is it
sexual?
Sexy personal? No,
sexy personal.
That's the name of my new comic. Right, that would probably be a big success on Kickstarter with a title like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's the name of my new wallpaper, which I'm a bit disappointed that Barry can't help me put up.
Yeah. Sorry, mate.
I'm not going to tell that joke. Another
9/11 joke we've had to cut out again.
Dude, I've got to cut that out now. Fucking hell. Right. But, of course, Barry's with us for the rest of the show. And it's time. We've got a couple of shout-outs.
Yeah, I've got a few.
Yeah. Tony, do you want to go first?
Take it first. So, what's wrong with you? Why haven't you pledged to Viper, the best comic on Kickstarter? Get on it. I just made that up on the cuff. Okay. It's good,
wasn't it? It sounded like you were reading from something.
No. Viper, bring it on. Come on, go and pledge to Viper. Probably the best video you'll see on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Genuinely. Yeah, and it's a brilliant book, and we love it. And yeah, I think it's about 2% from being over the numbers, but I'm sure it will make it. But yeah, you don't want to miss out.
By the time we talk about this, it's probably already made.
I reckon. Yeah. Couple of other ones. So the Drink and Draw is on the 13th of November. We're in good company because we're doing it alongside Thought Bubble. So this, come along to that.
The awesome Thought Bubble Drink and Draw.
There you go.
Which is now on the Thought Bubble website as well.
So. Oh, is it on there? Oh, cool. Nice one. Yeah. So 7:30 on the Friday night. It's the ideal intro before Thought Bubble goes full on. Come along.
Everyone's welcome. Ones. Doesn't matter. Just turn up, drink, have a laugh. You don't even have to be there for hours and hours. You could pop on for 15 minutes, do a sketch, and then pop off. It's a nice social event. So if you want to find out more about it, you can DM us at the Awesome Pod, and also our wonderful moderator, Tom Curry, at This Chucklehead. He will be putting it all together. We'll put some more details out for it soon as well. But cool. Yeah, look forward to that.
Got a couple of other ones. So imagesdegradingforever.blogspot.com. It's Star Jaws. Issue 40 just came out from Robin Barnard. It's a reimagining of Marvel Star Wars comics, amongst other things. It's great fun, and it's free. So go and have a look at that. imagesdegradingforever.blogspot.com. Stranger Zine, who's our US distributors for Tribute Press, are a great bunch of people, and they put out a really great zine about comics. They're getting their next issue ready, and in it will be a strip from Adam Falp called Jungle Land. It's the second part of that story, and it's really good. I got to read it yesterday, so go to strangersfanzine.bigcartel.com. Really good stuff, very cool. Those waiting on the Knockout and Tiger Style commentary, it's the last thing we've got to do from the Kickstarter. We've had a few scheduling issues around that, so fingers crossed we'll be recording that this afternoon as we speak now, so it should be out in the next few days. And thanks to everyone who came on the Inktober on the Awesome Comics Facebook page. I had a go, and it was great fun. There's a lot of great stuff on there, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of posts, so thanks to everyone who took part in that. Really good.
Awesome. Okay. And just as an extra bit of fun, we've got a 10-minute bit of audio for you now.
Yes.
That we're going to drop in. This is a creator who you'll be hearing more of in the future. But you
and a regular on the Drink and Draws.
Yeah, regular on the Drink and Draws as well. Very good artist. You had a chance to speak to Gabby Scanlon, didn't you, Tony?
I did, man, yeah. And she runs us down on her new Kickstarter. So have a listen and then go pledge on it, because it's a great story. Okay, bit of a new one here. We've got a bit of a new interview just to add to the mix this week. We've got Gabby Scanlon. Hello, Gabby. How are you, mate?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. You all right?
Yeah, good. Well, we're pals. You always come to the Drink and Draw, don't you?
So I do. I like to drink. There. I like to draw. Yeah.
Good. I'm not going to question you about it. You've admitted to me that you've been on another podcast previously. Let's not talk about that.
maybe literally 2 days ago.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, look at us running late. So we're just going to do a quick one, and we're going to get you on at a later date just to chat more about your art and stuff like that, which I've been looking at today. I'm very much enjoying. But I just wanted to talk about Stonewood Mountains. So let me get this right. Stonewood Mountains, Volume 1, Lost in the Woods. That's the official title? Yeah.
That's the official title, because it is a long story that we're thinking to release in 3 volumes. Because trilogies are nice. They look good on your shelf.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah, so it's quite... Is this the first comic you've done?
Yeah. Really the first one that people are going to see.
Okay.
I've been in a couple of anthologies.
Which ones have you been in?
Little Hero Comics, the third one.
Oh, I'm in that one. That was...
I have to look at it with fresh eyes. And then I did do a coronavirus-themed one.
That's right.
In March. But it wasn't as cool then. Not everybody was doing it then.
Yeah, it was much cooler. You were the first person. You told me that earlier. Good. So, now the guy, his name is Kyler Merrill is the writer and the creator, isn't it? Now, he's from Oklahoma, I think, isn't he, or somewhere?
Yeah. It basically came about because I'm in a group called the Comics Jam. I don't know if you've heard of them. So they're an international group, and we mainly just communicate over Discord. So I've made so many contacts through that, and that's what's led me to opportunities like this anyway.
Oh, cool.
It's nice, but you do have to consider time differences all the time.
Yeah. Now, Kyler is a man from Oklahoma who he's based this on a couple of his own friends, isn't he?
Yeah, and I didn't know that while I was doing the character design, which was good because you got the temptation of looking at the pictures. So I really liked that. He said it was basically a personality thing.
Jason
being quieter, Ariel being more in charge.
Yeah, he seems of an age where he probably wouldn't have friends of that age as well. I'm going to say that.
Oh,
so much
yeah,
younger. So it must have been from when he was a kid. Yeah. So did you want to tell us a little bit about what it's about, Gabby? Did you want to just say?
Yeah. So it focuses on Ariel and Jason, who are these two friends, on a camping trip in the woods of Stonewood Mountains. So it starts off pretty normally, and then the forest kind of has ideas of its own, and things start to change around them. So Jason's one to notice it first. The trees change in biodiversity, so they go from being like a pine forest to tropical, and okay. the fauna will follow the same. And then he encounters certain creatures, like you can see the Will of Wisps in the first six pages we've put up.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and the crucial factor is that the way that they've entered the forest no longer exists, so they've got no choice but to carry on, go further. They befriend some talking animals along the way.
Yeah, he mentions an owl. There's an owl, isn't there, or something?
Oh, the owl is so cool. He's omniscient, but also somehow like a surfer bro.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I've given him a quiff. He's great. But they find out that there's a malevolent force at play called the Rot, which slowly eats the forest alive.
Oh, I wonder what that was. So I was going to ask about the Rot. So is the Rot the villain of the entire three volumes? Is that the idea, or...?
Yes, but I use the term villain as a placeholder.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
Because it does go into deeper themes, and I like the fact that it does focus on the characters as well.
Yeah.
And sort of the development of their friendship. So there's quite a lot of metaphors and things that I can't yet reveal.
Okay. So, and there's also an environmental issue area too, I'm guessing. Yeah.
And yeah,
you can't say, can you? Yeah,
I know,
struggling.
I really can't.
Yeah.
It was even hard to draw at first because there's so many secrets in the script itself that I had to get them out of Kyla to be able to draw things at first.
Right, so you kind of got to work backwards sometimes with these things. I mean, you've got to see what it's going to be at the end, so you don't know what to foreshadow.
And it's going to be one where we do a lot of foreshadowing and drop little hints throughout.
Okay.
We've even got an alphabet made of runes that hopefully you can code break as you go through as
well. Yeah, now I've seen you've laid them out on your Instagram page, haven't you? I think in one of your stories there's like a map of them all on a wall sort of thing, is that right?
Yeah, there's some wall stuff. There's a guide somewhere that you can try and find.
Right.
Yeah, I might get some more hints about that, because if you're picking up on it, other people will be as well.
So, oh, that's good. That's good, isn't it? Yeah. Now, I saw you did a little video on Instagram of you showing all your... I think it was on Twitter, maybe I saw it. Of you showing the pages you'd done. Now, are you finished? Yeah. Are you finished yet, or...?
No, because it is one of them where we are hoping the funding will help me be able to work, because I'm getting paid, which is fantastic.
Oh, good stuff,
especially at my stage of the career, to find paying work is just wonderful. So... we're at the thumbnail stage for the rest of the pages. I've got six complete, and they're all available to purchase as the highest tier of the Kickstarter.
Oh, I get you. Yeah. Now, I notice there's another artist involved. Is it Jake Gustafsson?
Yeah, so he's our colourist.
Oh, okay, right.
Which was new for me as well, because I haven't worked with a colourist before. I just normally do on my own.
Yeah.
So it changes how, you know, while you're working, you have a final image in your brain. And I'm like, well, I can't count on that, because I don't know what he's going to bring to the pieces. But I think it helped me. It made me develop my inking work more, because I knew that was the bit that that was my
Yeah, and when you know it's going to be coloured, you draw it differently, I'm guessing, do you? You don't, there's less shading, et cetera, is there? Or?
Yeah, and I was also conscious of a terrible tendency I have to not define shapes properly.
Okay.
So I'll find this when I'm colouring my own work, like, I haven't quite finished that line, so I think, oh, it'll get cut off.
So the lines are not all joined up, in other words. Sort of thing. Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
And then when you come to flat, it's many problems. So I was more conscious of that, which I think helped the situation.
I mean, this is a great project. The more I hear about this, sounds like this is a great project to be involved in as your first sort of really long-form book. Because it sounds like it's up your street as well, thematically, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to pigeonhole myself too much yet, because... I'm literally willing to try any genre. But I think I quite like all ages, more kids-orientated stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to develop my line art to make it more expressive.
Good.
And just full of character.
It looks great, mate, I have to say. I had a little look through all your social media and your website and stuff, and I was thinking, she must have done work before. Because it is very, it looks honed to me. It looks, you know, and I just couldn't find anything, which is the reason I was quite surprised this was your first big thing. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't know. I think it looks great. Yeah.
I've been working a lot, but when it comes to, it's always like, I don't feel like I have work out because I've not got anything to sell.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, that is about to change because I'm releasing a digital comic for Thought Bubble.
Oh, right. Okay. What's that going to be?
Yeah. It's called Dreamscapes. It's going to be up on the Whip Comics there.
Yeah.
You know, where you've got your online shop linked to Thought Bubble.
Yeah.
Because I'm also part with them. Trying to make friends with as many comic people as possible.
They just had an anthology out, haven't they, I think?
Yes, it's wonderful. Definitely
Joe Stone's
recommend
a friend
that.
Of mine, and I know, yeah.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah. Oh, that's good. So you're... So that's so tell us a little bit more about that. So written and drawn by you as well, is it? Or
yeah, story. Had to do the lettering. Nightmare. So it's a restaurant where instead of serving food, they serve dreams.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's only 16 pages, so if I tell you more, that's the plot. But it's just a day at work of one of the characters.
That sounds brilliant. And it's not just 16 pages. Yeah. I've never drawn one page, so well done you. 16 pages is a big deal. Yeah. So this is going to be your job for about a year, I'm going to guess, is it? Are you quite fast, are you? Or?
Yeah, I'm giving myself about 6 months. Yes, I think it's 6 months, I think, which should be fine, because I know that I could do a certain amount and then pass them on to Jake to colour so that we can be producing pages as we go. So as soon as we hit the funding, then I'll get straight to work.
Yeah.
No mess.
Obviously, my only impression of him is from his... Kickstarter video, but he seems quite a sweet guy. He seems quite enthusiastic, nice guy. Good.
It's nice to we have become friends as well throughout doing it, which is helpful.
Yeah.
Because I literally message every day, like, what can we do for the Kickstarter? What this? So as long as someone's cool with that, that's fine.
That's fine. No, that's great. Yeah. But you've got about a month to run. Is it about 25 days or something like that left on the Kickstarter?
Thankfully, we went for a longer campaign, knowing that we had relatively small followings and sort of seeing what we could do to help throughout the campaign. Because you can't just post it and then sit back and watch.
No, you can't.
You've got to be on it all the time.
Yeah, I know. It's sad, isn't it? Having run a couple this year, I know exactly. I feel for you. Yeah. I mean, exactly
so
the same.
So I'm glad I'm not the behind-the-scenes person sorting the page out. I just get to do Twitter.
So where can people find it on... So it's under Stonewood Mountains on Kickstarter?
Stonewood Mountains on Kickstarter, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And where can we find you on social media?
Ah, you can find me at Gabby Scanlon. So my name is spelled GABBIESCANLOL.
LON.
Yeah.
And that's the same for Instagram, is it? Instagram and Twitter, the same? Good.
My name has unusual enough spelling that I can get all the domains, which is great.
Yeah.
If you type me in to Google, you'll find my portfolio and everything.
Yeah, I think I spelt it slightly wrong earlier, and I found a lady who'd done a shot in Manchester and had her stomach pumped out or something.
So many calls about that at the time.
You didn't, did you?
I did. Even my uncle was like, "Are you dead? Are you dead?" Thanks. No, I'm alive.
Yeah, that was with a Y. Yeah. You're Gabby, GABBIE. Yeah.
Important distinction there. I'm doing fine. I would be careful what I ingest.
Good stuff. So I mean, I've backed it. Yeah, it looks great. I'm looking forward to it. Fingers crossed you make it and everything. So it's good stuff, and I suggest everyone else who listens to this backs it. Also have a look for your comic at the Work in Progress shop Come Thought Bubble. I know they've released the tables and stuff have all come out. The exhibitors came out today, didn't they? I think
yeah.
So have a look for that. And any other sort of creative plans other than you always come to our drink and draws, which is always fun. Always see you there.
Yeah, I like to do that. If I'm allowed, I will shout out another Kickstarter.
Please
that
do.
I'm also involved in.
Yeah.
So this one is called A Cold Dark Universe, and it's a sci-fi anthology of about 8 stories. So that's sci-fi stories with a positive tilt, aiming to bring light to the current dark times that we're in.
Okay.
So I'll be doing the artwork for a story in those, and it's just a great company, great people, and talented artists on there.
That sounds great. So who's putting that out?
That's Black Hole... And Black Hole Comics and Entertainment. So they're a relatively new company, but they've got some nice, strong focus on diversity, creativity, and innovation, I think.
And where are they based? I've not heard of them before.
Also America? Not too sure
where. It's where the big bucks is, Gabby. That's where we go.
Yeah, it's good to have contacts over there, for sure.
Good. All right, mate. Thanks for coming on. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, we'll get you on for a big, full episode.
Yeah, that'll be nice, actually. You'd enjoy that.
Nice one.
There you go. This show has been jam-packed full of goodness. What did you say? Well, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, jam-packed? No, I suppose not so.
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd that come from, jam? Don't pack jam in, do you?
You do. Well, what about a jammy dodger? You get...
Yeah, so you pack that in, don't you? I love a jammy dodger.
Well, actually, no, I guess they come in the pack, don't they?
What's your favourite kind of biscuit, Barry?
Well, it's contentious.
Oh, it's going to be Jaffa Cakes.
No, come on, then.
It is.
We deal with controversial subjects on this show all the time.
It is. And if I mention it to someone that I work with, she always kicks off. That's not a fucking biscuit.
Cake.
I'm like,
go on.
It's a cake. It's the clues in the title. I'm like, okay, but I still see it. It's a biscuit.
You dunk it. You can still dunk it, can't you? Therefore, it's a biscuit in my eyes.
Yeah.
No, you can dunk anything, Tony, and that doesn't necessarily make it a
biscuit. I dunk toast. Baby.
Failing that, chocolate rich tea. Biscuits.
Okay, yeah, nice.
You can only get from Sainsbury's.
Yeah, nice. I will also say...
Not Sainsbury's, Co-op.
I think a plain chocolate digestive is off the chain.
Mm. Yep,
but for me, the greatest is the custard cream.
Oh. I like a fig roll, me, but that's because I'm ancient.
Blimey, that's...
Going back a bit.
No, what about a Garibaldi? You don't see them about as much. Ever since Go Ahead.
I used to work with a bloke called Garibaldi because his name was Gary and he was bald, and that was his nickname.
Where is all the originality these days? Yeah.
Hey? I used to work with someone called Custard because he liked custard. That's cool, isn't it?
Because he liked custard.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Where do you go from there, Barry?
The only way is up after that.
Exactly. And the best way to elevate this show is to recommend some lovely comics to you people. As always, the guest goes first. Barry, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I would like to recommend Pulp, which is by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. It's really annoying because... I brought it up on Goodreads and the letter isn't here, and it's one of my pet peeves with things is that a lot of places never include the letterer, which I always find quite annoying. So I don't know if you guys have read Pulp or...
I own it. I haven't got around to reading it yet.
I lose track on the amount of series that these two do together.
They're putting them out, aren't they?
They're
putting out more sort of standalone hardbacks at the moment, seems to be where they're going with it to me. Is that right? Seems to be the way.
Yeah, because this is... 70. I mean, I read it digitally, but it's 72 pages.
Yeah.
And it's centered around a pulp writer, and I'm a massive fan of like pulp stuff anyway. Called Max Winters, and it's set in the 1930s, and he writes the sort of real dime dollar westerns.
Yeah.
And what's great about the comic is it switches between the 1930s and him sort of going into his head with these westerns. And then what you realize is and the main character is kind of based on him and his sort of life and stuff. And the best way to kind of describe it is like those old school sort of detective films like The Maltese Falcon and The Big Sleep and whatever, with Unforgiven.
Okay.
All right.
And it's great. I mean, I sort of read it in the sitting this morning, and I've got to say that's a great thing about you guys having me on is because it's the most I've read comic wise in a couple of months. Because I literally just thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to go on and I'm going to read some comics before I go in and chat with the guys, and I read about sort of four comics back to back.
Oh, good man. Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of, and it's that thing sometimes you sort of forget. And I kind of sat down, I was like, I forgot what it's like to lose yourself for like a couple of hours just reading, you know? I mean, I'm saying that it's a dark tale. But it is. It's Ed Brubaker. You kind of, and you know what you're getting, you know?
They're great. A brand, those two. You know it's going to be class, don't you?
Cool. Yeah, they must be at a point where there's a guaranteed, there's a certain amount that are going to purchase it straight away because they're of a brand.
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of these people who run on such long-running things, don't they? They've changed it up, so they've gone from, I think, from a sort of monthly or, you know, whenever, you know, floppy release to trade. They've gone to this, so this is like it's like a BD approach, isn't it? So it's like an album, a hardback album, I think.
Yeah.
And they've done a few of these now. And I think it's a great model, man. I really like it. I think it's good. But you're right. I think Sean draws fast. I mean, I love his art, but he certainly draws it fast, and they seem to be coming out quickly. I actually got to the point where I'm having trouble keeping track of what's what at the moment. But I think Pulp is definitely the last one they brought out. Fairly certain of that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Is that the one with the typewriter on the cover?
No, that's the... that's the one about the writer in Hollywood. Oh.
See, that's what I mean.
No, this one, it looks like a Western. When you look at the cover, it looks like a Western.
Yeah. Past guest, Sean Phillips.
We spoke to him at London Super Comic Con, didn't we?
It was, grabbed it. Really enjoyable chat because he's really into Bronze Age comics. Yeah. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And he really wanted to do a romance comic. Have they done a romance?
That's right.
Have they done a romance comic yet?
I suppose there's little elements of it, isn't there? But he just put out the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu kind of black and white magazine at the time. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I loved that. It's so good. Yeah.
I never read that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's like, it looks like the old school magazines, like Savage Sword of Conan. They did a version of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, really good. Oh, nice one, man. No, it's a good shout. Always dependable. I think that's with them, isn't it? Always dependable, well written, well drawn. Yeah, very cool as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go next. Now, this was once again on the search for like new publishers. Well, I say new publishers, new to me. It seems like whenever I think I've discovered something, it's been around for ages.
Right.
I discovered a publisher called Sloth Comics. From the UK.
Yeah, I met them in Glasgow last year. Yeah, nice guys.
Yeah. They put out quite a bunch of books, and you should go to their website, slothcomics.co.uk. It's got the top, just lazy fun. And is there a better kind of fun? Don't send us any emails. But I'm looking through their titles, which all, for me, when it comes to, I mean, new publishers or like, you know, a publisher's presence on the web and their website and stuff does mean a lot, because I went to this website and the presentation of it and also the quality and of the books themselves, what they look like in terms of the presentation, that does a lot for me. You know, it has to look like a real book. I know everything can be a real book, but you know what I mean? It's still got to look like it's had some thought put into it. And all of their titles are like that. And I discovered one that I thought, right, I just need to order this. And it's called Booyah. Now, this is a translated book, actually, which I discovered.
Okay.
When I looked in the title, I think it was a French... Yeah, it was in
French. What's Booyah in French? Is it something different, you think?
It's got... I'm going to murder this. Bouyule.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. by the creator is Laura, which is Lauren, but I'm sure it's pronounced like that. But this actually came out in 2011, which surprised me when I read that. I mean, it's because of this show that I go to the credits of a book so that I know what I'm referencing. Do you know what I mean?
Lots of what we read these days seems to be a translation, isn't it? We go there quite a lot. Sometimes it surprises you. Those Conan books we read recently, that's a translation. We never realised straight away, did we?
No. And I certainly didn't, because this book doesn't have any, you know, it's not particularly set in a certain place or time or anything like that. But this is, on the back of the book, it says, "Please meet Booyah, a big green friendly monster, the hero of this book. Unfortunately, this unusual helpful goof loves to help children and elder ladies despite his clumsiness and severe anger management issues. What could go wrong?" Now, from what I described, you think, what a lovely all ages kids book. Nope. the cover of this book is, and it's got a wonderful cartoony vibe. I absolutely adore this book. It's got a wonderful cartoony vibe, and you've got a big green monster on the top. He's trying to hit a pinata. He's got a blindfold on the cover. He's trying to hit a pinata, but there's carnage around him. There is blood. There are kids with their heads smashed in around him, and he hasn't hit the pinata yet. But it's all done in a cartoony sort of style. This is one of those Adult Swim, violent, funny, no swear words, no cursing of any sort.
Okay.
It's almost just like a cartoonish, over-the-top. This friendly monster who wants to be friends with everyone, and things inevitably go wrong. He doesn't go, you know, he doesn't go around murdering lots of people, but this is an anthology book, and there's a story called Mr. Sandman, Bring Me a Scream, where he's making hot chocolate for these kids, and when he goes into their room, there's a bear there, a friendly looking bear. He says he's the Sandman's assistant. But Booyah sees a bear lurching over the kids. So he goes, gets into a fight with the bear. And that, by the end of it, there's blood, there's gore, and there's a chase scene with the Sandman, which ends with a photocopier being thrown at him. You know, as you do. There was a one-page interlude, which I actually took a picture and I sent to the guys on the WhatsApp, of Booyah fishing, which just made me laugh. And at the end, there's a slightly longer story called Night of the Living Dead Scout Zombies from Hell, which would kind of give you an idea of what this tale is about. And it's just, it's great, over-the-top fun that feels... I mean, it came out in 2011, but it feels fresh. It's new to me, and I think more people need to discover this. I actually ordered it on Amazon because I couldn't find anywhere else to get them. I don't think that they do the digital either. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think he's the American guy living in Scotland, I think, the guy runs it.
What, the guy that runs Sloth? Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly going to be looking at more of their titles because they just look, you know, for instance, there's ones called Goblins, Ash Academy of Superheroes, Steam Hammer. What an amazing name for a comic.
that's what I call mine.
Yeah. Oh. But Booyah is one of them. So if you go to slothcomics.co.uk, you can find out more about it. They're on Twitter and stuff as well. But I just want to recommend this to everyone. It is like it's not like a 20-page book either. It's like 40 odd pages, I think. It's a nice little collection. What was it? It was only about $6.99, I think. Lovely presentation. I've read it a couple of times, which goes a long way, I think, in this time where it's a quick read, but you'll just keep coming back in it. A good, unadulterated chuckle.
We race through a lot of comics these days, don't we? Yeah. Without going back to them. I think we need to do that a bit more,
So, yeah, Booyah, which is just great to say anyway. So that's my one. Tony?
Cool. Mine's from AWA, Upshot, Mature Readers imprint. Now, AWA, I think you've got an email from me, V, recently approached us around some reviews, and they're an interesting company. Do you know what it stands for? It stands for the Slightly Snobby Poncy Artists, Writers and Artisans. Yeah, there we go.
Living in Bath, I know all about artisans because every sausage roll is an artisan.
Isn't it these days? It's got two imprints, Upshot and iPop, and this is from the Upshot. They've done, you might have seen stuff, Archangel they did with Michael Morici, who was a past guest of ours. They've done stuff with Jason Starr. I'm a big fan of Jason Starr's novels, actually. Did a Wolverine run a few years ago as well. And they did The Resistance with Diodato and J. Michael Straczynski. You know, you've seen that, yeah. So definitely an up-and-comer. So the one I'm going to talk about is American Ronin, which is the first of 5-issue mini. First issue came out this week. It's written by Pete Milligan, art by ACO, inked by David Lorenzo. I've got to tell you later, David, when you got sent a page through, man, you've got a big job in front of you, I've got to tell you, which we'll get onto in a second. Dean White on colours and Sal Cipriani on letters. It's a Milligan book, so you know it's going to be something quite astute, something quite strange and something quite different. You know, you don't always assume with Milligan, do you? He's part of that wave of Vertigo writers, which really had a sort of significant originality in what he did. And when we've enjoyed his books previously and the stuff he did from Black Crown, for example, it involves assassins, the use of sex as a weapon, the extremely super rich, and the behavior of a single solitary hitman. There's a psychic element to it, psychic powers element to it. There's a psychosexual element to it as well. There's lots of intrigue. There's lots of espionage. There's an awful lot of violence. And there is, just for you, Barry, a lot of toe sucking.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I've gone to the site. I was just looking at, because you can see some of the first issue.
Yeah, you can read. I think you read about a third of the first issue on it. It's quite good. Yeah. The art.
I mean, the art's stunning.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, it really is good. I don't think the cover does it a great service, because if you looked at the cover, you'd think it's some kind of sort of gangster story. It's very Mondo. It's a little too, I think, from the point of view of, which I'm guessing you're thinking as well, Barry, is the art inside is much better than the cover. You get a surprise, don't you, when you open it up and you see what's inside.
Yeah,
it's really good. So the story is real power lays in the big companies of the world at the time, and not really in the state. I think it's kind of slightly near future. There are the company's the one who involved in the big power struggles, and there's the scene of and these people use long trained assassins and bodyguards and sort of agents who have been picked and trained since they were kids. Many of them are technologically advanced skills that are both physically and mentally give them the advantage on others. One of these espionage operatives decides that he's going to take on the system. So he becomes that Ronin, that sort of lone warrior. He's after a multi-billionaire called Barrett Cornell, who's pretty flawed, as we see, most notably in American politics, is flawed by his need for the sins of the flesh. But the Ronin goes after him in a really interesting way. What this Ronin can do, he has to get a sample of the person's DNA, which he then injects into himself, and he is allowed then entry into their own nightmares and their anxieties and their thoughts and their dreams and stuff like that. So it's full of action as well. There's plenty of action in it, but it's quite cerebral as well in relation to how the story is told and how because this guy, this billionaire, it's impossible to get near him. He's surrounded by bodyguards. He travels the world constantly. He's got his own jets, his own helicopters and stuff like that. But he uses this power he's got to get into him, and he uses it to get into him by approaching and getting on side quite a sexy lady who's got a couple of, I don't know what they are, jaguars or something like that, that she has around her all the time. So there's a lot of very sexy ladies in this book. There's a lot of psychosexuality that goes on in it. But the art is absolutely outstanding and, like, uber detailed. The layouts themselves, just panels piled upon each other with horizontal views centrally. And there's a real, I don't know what you think, but I think the colours are real MVP in this. It's just eye-poppingly beautiful. I've got to tell you, because ACO does pencils and then he sends it on to David Lorenzo for inks. So I've got to say, well done, David, because if I got through that through the postman, I think I'd need a pay rise, because there's an awful lot of lines on all those pages. The characters ooze personality. You're never lost at any point to know who's who, because I think occasionally there's a little bit of a too much of a lean on photorealistic stuff on the reference material, but it's not intrusive. Occasionally you think, yeah, I get that look.
Still,
yeah,
feels like a comic rather than
does. Yeah. It's properly drawn. But he's clearly using reference, real people as reference, which I didn't go, you know, it's sometimes you open a comic and you think, oh, there's such and such from the Avengers movie, or, you know, you know, it's like that. It's not like that. It's not like that at all. It's actually very accomplished. So it's really good. So like I say, the colours are great. The cover was a little bit underwhelming. Pete Milligan talks about, there's a little, I think you can read this on their site as well. Pete Milligan talks about how he planned out the issue and how many things. But what he does is he makes it about, it's kind of more Bond than it is, I don't know, Infernal Affairs or something like that. But he also has that element, he makes it very personal, because this Ronin uses the psychic ability that he's been given in order to invade people's dreams and use that in order to entrap them. However, it has a desperate impact on him. It's almost like a PTSD element to he's finding it very, he's very damaged through utilizing this skill, which is quite an interesting way of doing it, I think. I actually really, really enjoyed it. It's a 5-issue mini. I think I probably will buy it in trade and read it like that. I think it will make a great read, an all-in-one. But there's plenty of action. There's plenty of story. It's not decompressed in any way in this issue. I think it's pretty good. And I like Milligan. I do like his writing. I like his imagination. And he's a twisted bastard at times, but I think this is really good. So what's the website? I can't remember now. But if you look for AWA on Comixology.
AWAstudios.net.
That's it. Thank you, man. Yeah, and you can read a chunk of issue one on there. I think you can read a chunk of all their issues on there.
Yeah.
The first issues, it's pretty good for that. A bit like how TKO and all these sort of guys do it as well. It's in the new hotness, isn't it?
It's to stick most of your first issue out.
I quite like that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
It's quite interesting. I mean, just looking on the website from a desktop, when you're looking at the comic, it says, for the best reading experience, view this comic on a mobile device.
Mobile device, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was quite interesting. I guess because it's just like it streams downwards, doesn't it? It's just a constant flow, like...
The way they split it up. Maybe a little bit like that. The way they split it up on the website is different from the way they split it up on Comixology, actually. Slightly different.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot more black space around the images when you read it on the website.
Oh.
They sort of space it out like that. When on guided view, you don't get that black space around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but right. No, good, nonetheless. So I think they're an exciting company. They're... who is it who's Alex Alonso and Bill Jamis are part of the owners of it. You know, they came from some great work at Marvel. There you go.
Yeah. Interesting. I have to keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
I think Devil's Highway is one of the, what I read of theirs as well.
Oh, yeah, I think you've got that one on the email, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll probably be, I might even mention that soon. You never know. You never know what's going to happen with this show. Apart from the fact that we always have a laugh and the guests are awesome. And this week, Barry, you've been an absolute star. Thank
another
you.
Triumph.
Another a triumph.
Thanks for having me on.
You didn't sound grateful enough, Barry.
Yeah.
No, it's because I'm still waiting to get an email from you saying we've had like 50 people wanting their houses wallpapered, so I'm worried now.
Right, I need to get on Twitter. Hang on.
Yeah. Wait until the episode goes live. That's all right. I've still got to do a lot of editing. No.
Well. Or I've done a clever twist, and the twist is I'm starting my own wallpapering company, and this is the way to drum up business.
There you go. Walter Wall Nugent. That's the way it will be. Hey, that's a
good Nuge cake, Nuge cake papers.
It's like you're in my head. There's two ideas. I might have to like get my company name changed now.
Yeah. Do it now. The episode won't go live for about another 24 hours. Right.
Okay.
But thank you for listening to us, folks. As always, we love you guys, and thank you for sticking with the nonsense, learning, and obviously this is, whether you listen to us at any time of the week, we hope you enjoyed it. If there's anything we spoke about that you want to know more about, get in touch with us. Likewise, if there's any events coming up between now and the end of the year, crazy as this year is at the moment, but what is happening, we're all stuck at home, so what wonderful digital comic events are happening, let us know and we will shout them out. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be shouting out about drink and draws and all kinds of things. With the drink and draw itself as well, there are a couple of hashtags. But we'll talk a bit more about that on next week's show and how you can
looking forward to this.
Properly.
Really am.
Yep. It's open to all. If you're one of those people who go, oh, I can't really draw, you just turn up, do a doodle.
Yeah, come on. And some people just come along to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
God help them.
It's not for kids. I'd like to point it out. He's fairly adult.
Yeah, well, I mean, with this one, there's going to be different like Zoom rooms.
Yeah, we did all behave last time because Brian's kid ran into frame, didn't he? And we're everyone
that was the one moment where it behaved.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, join the fantastic community of people that is on the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. There's no hard selling there. It's just people who love comics, make comics, do comic events. It's basically, you can talk about whatever you want, and maybe you want some advice on the comic you're making. Put a question out and you will get a stream of replies. And likewise, other stuff. There's a drinking thread. There should be a drinking thread for this show. There's a drawing thread that Dan Butcher puts up as well. We just had a Halloween one. Do you know if that's going? That should be going live.
Yeah, so you still do it. Yeah, always, yeah, I thought we would drop it off pinned tweet this week. But yeah.
Yes, there's always great artwork to check out. So definitely check out that page whenever you can. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, we're on now.
Oh, yeah.
Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on the new network, Pod, Dildos as Weapons.
There it is, folks, the moment where this episode went off the cliff.
I sent you the section of script that refers to that yesterday.
Yes, I did.
And you went, Tony, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, which is normally how I reply to every single message he sends me. Where can people find you online, etc.?
Tributepress.bigcartel.com. The Never On Anything podcast just hit 50. I'm very pleased. Yeah, so yeah, well we're done. Doing that as well. Thank you, man.
Nice. Cheers. And Dan @vanguardcomic.com, and go to Kickstarter and pledge on Viper.
Because yeah, Viper. Get on it. What's wrong with you?
It's great. And also seeing those pages in full colour, everyone's in for it. Just absolute joy.
So, it's fucking mental. It's so mental.
It is crazy, so over the top madness. It is madness, but you will enjoy it, and it's
the most fun I've ever had writing a little prologue and intro to a book was on that one. So, yeah, really funny. Yeah, I just applied myself to Dan's life, which you'll see if you get the book. Yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
Yes, and follow him. The latest issue of Vanguard has just come to an end and looks amazing. Finished it with a fantastic double page spread. So @VanguardComic, go forth and follow him and follow his comic. You can find me on the socials. God, I'm so hip, aren't I?
don't. No.
No, don't say anything. At Jester Diablo, where I will be posting up all kinds of things, probably more stuff about the drink and draw, probably pictures of my cats, and whatever I'm doodling at the time. I need to get back into drawing. I haven't drawn anything for a few days. I need to sort it out.
There you go.
Terrible, Vincent. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Unlike our wonderful guest, Barry Nugent, who's been an absolute legend, where can people find you online, Barry?
You can find me on geeksyndicate.co.uk or unseenshadows.com and just generally hanging around outside wallpaper shops. I don't know what it is about wallpaper, genuinely.
Paint is available.
I think it's because after I finish go and sand the door, so I've got DIY on my mind, that's what it is.
Which is how we finish every show, with a bit of DIY.
I tried DIY once today.
No, Tony, not that kind of DIY. Oh, God, disgraceful. Thank you for listening, everyone. No matter where you are, we hope you're safe, healthy, and doing okay. We will continue to do this nonsense and entertain you. So, we love you, and we hope you're all right.
I don't really love you.
Well, he doesn't. Barry loves you all, don't you?
I'm mildly invested in you.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say you're mildly aroused, because that's where I was at.
No.
You're always at full mast, aren't you, Bess?
Just always raising that tent, yeah.
We'll have him back, Vince.
He's lowered himself to our levels, so now he's welcome back anytime. So thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth, read loads of comics, create loads of comics, and just be awesome like we know you are. From Dan, Tony, Barry, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, what do they do?
Say awesome.
There you go. Barry, like, you did say it.
Stay awesome. Oh,
he's got his own. He's got his own brand to worry about. That's what it is.
Yeah. I was about to say Geek Syndicate, we out. I'm like, this ain't my show.
You should have. That would have been amazing. Bye, everyone.
So on brand.
Yeah, bye, all.
Barry.
Hey, Barry.
Morning, guys.
Hey, hi, Barry.
You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Just
getting your PJs.
I am in my PJs. I made an effort today. Okay. I actually got dressed.
Yeah, tuck it away, my friend. It's a decent show.
It's hard. I mean, it's not hard. Just forget it.
Outtakes, Vince, outtakes.
Yeah. I've listened to your show. That won't be an outtake. You'll just leave that shit in.
Yeah.